This is the Ro Khan Show with me, Anna DeBlantis. Ro will be along in just a few minutes here. This is Election Day, at least in the city of Chicago, and we'll be taking you up until the time when the polls close today. Everybody vote today who's able to on the show, who's living in the city.
I can't vote yet, but next year, or the next election, I'll be eligible, and I'm very excited about that.
I still technically live in Oregon.
Oh, you got to get that changed over.
Yeah.
And Kev, you're in the suburbs.
I'm in the
suburbs.
Doesn't
apply to you, so you're just watching. But we have turnout is still pretty anemic, according to the Board of Elections. 20% of registered voters had turned out by 1 o'clock. That kind of mirrors what happened in February during the primary. And they were hoping for more because 20% isn't the right number when it comes to. I mean, there's no weather issue today, right, guys? There's no reason to not be out there and cast your vote.
So, what do you make of the low turnout still?
I wonder if people feel like if you're not in one of those wards where you've got a hotly contested aldermanic race and you look at the polls, you wonder, what does my vote matter? And people always ask themselves that question. And I got to tell you, in a low turnout race, it does matter. It absolutely matters. You saw what separated the candidates in the primary for the race for mayor, that very few votes, right? So it totally matters. And, you know, I just you just hope that improves as the afternoon goes on. It's 3 o'clock. Polls still open till 7. You've got Justin Kaufman and the WGN coverage live from the Billy Goat Tavern tonight. That all begins at 7 o'clock right here on 720. And so it'll be interesting. It'll be interesting to see how this plays out. I saw an interesting couple of events as you follow sort of the timeline of what's going on today on Election Day. And the one thing that struck me is there's no one on the ballot who is currently under indictment. I thought that was an interesting little factoid. Isn't that great?
Progress.
Yeah. Yay. Yay, Chicago. Yay. There aren't all that many people on the ballot, but that's still a nice thing to know, right? That's good. Marianne Ahern over at NBC is reporting that there's a truck picking up signs for just Lightfoot and a couple other candidates, but not Preckwinkle signs. You know, when they're on public property or they violate the foot rules from certain polling places, they're allowed to pick them up. Well, they've got a truck that picked up all the Lightfoot signs and nothing else. So that nonsense is still underway.
There we go.
Some things never change. But it's interesting. It's
interesting. Today, there wasn't any of them at the polling place today.
Nothing?
Nothing by me. I ran into Phil Rosenthal from the Tribune. I'm like, what are you doing here? He goes, well, I'm voting here. I go, what am I doing here? Oh, I'm voting here.
Did you look over and try to see what he was voting for?
Yeah, I found out. He wrote himself in. Yeah, it's the damnedest thing.
Yeah. Media people. We're all like that.
So, it's been a crazy day of following this because we're going to talk to a guy at 3:40 this afternoon that is he got his identity essentially stolen. He went to go vote, and when he voted, they looked up on the iPad. Which, you know, I'm wondering what they're doing now because it's like getting a car loan to go and get yourself to get the ballot.
Right. They look at that little screen. You're like, what are they doing over there? And there's a lot of button pressing. They look up at you and they look at their little screen.
Thank God nobody votes in this town. Otherwise, the lines would be like in Mogadishu. I mean, it'd be like crazy. This is a situation where you walk in, they hand you a paperclip, and they said, and then they tried to upsell me on undercoating, which I thought was weird.
Upsell you?
Yeah. And then you fill out your name, your information, your whole deal. And then you hand over the thing, and then they hand it to another guy. You give your clipboard back to the lady who gave you a clipboard. Then they hand the clipboard over to another guy, who then starts to look at it. And then he looks at you, and then he looks at the clipboard. And then he pulls up an iPad, and he starts pressing things on the iPad.
Right.
And then he adjusts his glasses, and then he keeps looking at the iPad. And then he looks back at you, and then he goes, mm-hmm. And then he looks back over at the lady and then nods. And then the lady hands you the what looks like a placemat that then you have to put into a placemat holder. And then you carry that in. And then it took me about a second and a half to do the voting because I only had to vote for two people. Mm-hmm. Right. And they give you the pen. You did a little line. You're done. Hand it back, turn it around, and I literally came out from behind the people that I was, you know, they let me pass the perimeter there, and I just went in between them and handed back my placard holder. I put the thing in my own Nobody had voted. It was like, you know, was it 9 o'clock in the morning?
Yeah, how many people were there? Phil Rosenthal was there. You were there. Was there anybody else there? Because I passed by the polling place here in this building at 8:30 this morning. You would think that'd be a hot time because people are going to work. No one. I couldn't see a single voter. It was all bored-looking election workers. When I went over to my polling place, it was a little busier. No lines for
9:05,
sure.
Nothing. Zip-bitty-doo-da, zip-bitty-yay. Nobody was in there. When I left, two people were waiting in line because, and the line takes an hour because it takes that much, takes half an hour to actually go through the process again, to getting your placemat. Then now, you know, as a kid, if you ever tried to take a magic marker to your parents' placemat, you get yelled at.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's encouraged. Now that's democracy. All right. Well, it's over now.
You've done what you can do.
Right. I've done everything I can do.
That's all you can do.
Mm-hmm.
It's out of your hands now.
We'll just have to see who comes in first here. Is it the tall one or the short one? That's the one that I've that's got to
There is a height difference. Oh, I mean, people are a lot of looking for differences here, and that's one big difference.
Yeah, looks like the Clinton cabinet. Remember when?
Yes, Janet Reno was like real big, and then Donna Shalala really small.
I always loved the State of the Union because it was like a clown car pulled up, and everybody got out, and you had all kinds. Everybody looked different. You know,
wanted a cabinet, an administration that looked like America.
I wanted to look like America and be filled with women from America. Oh, yeah.
He did that.
I sure did. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Especially the one with the beret. Oh, wait, hold on. So this is the end of democracy as we know it here in Chicago.
It is.
This is it. We've done everything we can do. But we'll find out what this was all about. What happens if you go in and you find out you've already voted and you haven't actually voted?
That is awful. Bizarre.
Yeah. Well, it's Chicago.
I know, but gosh.
Found it not surprising at all.
But with a 20% turnout, gosh, for that to happen, you wonder what else is going on.
Yes.
Right?
I know what's going on.
You sort of look at the math there, and you think, okay.
And I got to stop, and I got to think about, now, who might be stealing here? I'm going to lay my cards out on the table.
Okay.
If someone is trying to steal the election,
right.
I'm going to stop, and I'm going to think, is it the person who's brand new to this business, who is a lawyer who literally, you know, is former federal prosecutor, and now a lawyer in private practice,
mm-hmm.
who is a nobody sent.
And doesn't really have the organization of the people who've been around for generations.
Right, although she's inherited some organization here, though. She has gotten some since she became the not Tony, which is what she became.
Mm-hmm.
Or is it the person who's been in politics now for a number of decades,
mm-hmm.
who has an organization, who's got a lot of other things going on, and Kim Fox is her hand-picked state's attorney. Who's zooming whom? Which, by the way, was a problem with that song. It's whom, not who. Who's zooming
whom? Right, that was a problem with that song.
All
right. That's separate.
Yes, that's totally separate. Thank you. So I guess the question is, you know, I have a suspicion about that. And I'm going to ask you, is it somebody who just got here or somebody who's been here for a long time? Who might be the one who might be trying to steal the election?
Well, it comes back to Marian Ahern just reporting the irregularities she saw with just the Lightfoot signs getting picked up by this truck, and then the ones that they were right next to, according to her reporting, Preckwinkle signs that were not getting picked up. Curious.
Very interesting. Extremely curious. And there was nobody out in front of my polling place.
Nobody.
It feels weird, doesn't it? No, I'm telling you. It was reminding me of The Godfather.
That's so strange. That wouldn't feel like election day.
Right? It's like when they went to go visit Vito at the hospital. Remember? Remember when Enzo the Baker shows up to go visit him and there's nobody there? And you're like, where is everybody?
Doesn't feel right.
Right?
Like, something's wrong.
Something's gone wrong here. Enzo the Baker's here. I'm coming to visit your father. He gave me the big break, right? And he's got the flowers and the thing.
Totally ready.
Right? And then, right? And then Sonny has, or not Sonny, but Michael has to tell him, all right, put your hand in the pocket. Pretend you got a piece because people are showing up. That's what Lori's doing right now at the polling place. She's standing there. She's having everybody put their hands in their pockets. Drop the flowers. All right. Time now. Let's check in. Kim Gordon will find out what's happening in the bottom of the hour news.
And as we've been talking about, voters are making history today, electing Chicago's first female African-American mayor.
Tonight, as soon as the polls close, turn to WGN-TV. Complete election coverage, all the results, reaction, along with expert analysis. Watch your vote count starting tonight at 7 on WGN-TV.
I'm with you, Pop. I'm with you. That's what I said to my ballot today, because it was like going to the, it's like going to the hospital with Enzo the Baker. There was nobody in the polling place, and I started to wonder, where are all the people who are standing around the polling places? No one's there. And all of a sudden, they showed up. Then Captain McCluskey showed up and punched me right in the jaw.
Oh,
it was crazy. I didn't even understand what to do.
No.
Ben Bradley understands how this goes.
He knows the game.
Are we hearing Ben? Oh, hold on. This is there. I see the problem we have here. Hold on. This is, I pressed the button and it didn't stay pressed. All right, now we got you.
Hello, Rose. So you put on a suit and a tie. You look dapper. You got your smart guy glasses on.
Yeah, I do. Yes.
And you forget to open my microphone.
Yes, thank you very much. That's what I'm doing. It's a totally different look. Little look for the CLTV.
And there you go.
And I'm on a competing TV station tonight, so I can't say that on CLTV. They get mad at me
about
that.
You jerk.
Hey, you didn't invite me. How come
you're always invited.
No, I'm not, actually.
Lourdes and I were barely invited to participate in tonight's coverage. We're actually, like, at the kiddie table, so you've got, like, Joe and Micah and 36 other panelists. And then you go over to the kids' table. It's like a folding card table, and you'll find Lourdes and I.
I got sort of disinvited, quite honestly.
Oh, gosh. There's a story there we need to hear.
I don't know.
Mm-hmm. It was a dark period in your life.
Yeah.
So,
all right, but
anyway, you were speaking about how you were all alone in your voting today. Latest numbers from the Chicago Board of Elections as of 3:10 p.m. voter turnout at about 23.1%. If you just look at the hour by hour comparisons to the February vote, it looks like we're running a little bit behind the February turnout.
Yes.
Yeah.
Ooh. You know, I spoke to a friend of mine today who is a lifelong Chicagoan.
Mm-hmm.
As you know, Anna and I are.
Sure.
And we she was like, oh my God, today's election day.
What?
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Doesn't that always bum you out? It's like, who are we talking to? Who, don't you all pay attention?
Yeah. I know.
That, I would just argue, not to get on my soapbox, but I would just argue that there is a large segment of those currently in power who count on people to not pay attention.
Yes, I am. Yeah. No. No, you're shocking me with that
revelation.
You believe
that? You believe that?
Thank you very much.
So, turnout looks to be low. Remember, we thought we were going to have near record low turnout in February, but then once all the ballots were counted, we inched up and got to what, like 34% ish in February.
Here's
and
what we learned.
Somehow we're supposed to celebrate that.
Here's what we learned, though.
Mm-hmm.
Here's what we learned. This is good. You know who this is good for? This is good for Tony. Who's asking? There's no question it's going to be tighter. I had this at a 3-1 Lori Lightfoot runaway.
Mm-hmm.
I'm now going to posit it's going to be a touch tighter than that, a lot
interesting.
Tighter than that, actually.
Well, I guess conventional wisdom would say that Toni Preckwinkle has the infrastructure. She's got the ward by ward precincts.
Mm-hmm. She's got the trucks that are picking up the signs.
But keep in mind, nobody said Lori Lightfoot would be in the runoff. Few thought somebody like Bill Daley would get cut out. But that's happened. I think this year is a very different year from what we've seen before. I think 9 of 15 wards that have a runoff tonight were wards that Lightfoot beat Preckwinkle. So I think if you look at that number, you would say those wards would expect to have higher turnout because people would be showing up to also vote for aldermen.
Yeah.
And Lori Lightfoot had an edge in those wards, so that's an interesting stat to look at.
Preckwinkle has a lot of union support, though, and union workers vote in this town, mm-hmm. and that's sort of baked in for her. You would think it like Rizzo points out, you would almost think that it would favor her.
Right.
If turnout stays low.
Yeah, the other thing we were talking about in the newsroom earlier today, and I think it's a fascinating point, is if you look at all of the other candidates who didn't make it into the runoff, not one wound up endorsing Toni Preckwinkle. All who endorsed went for Lori Lightfoot. And so that's a lot of votes out there. And again, endorsements don't necessarily translate into votes. But boy, is that interesting. By the way, I think we're still waiting for Gary McCarthy to chime in after his February. I've met some terrible people in this process.
Can I just tell you? can I ask you a question about Gary McCarthy? Has anybody seen him since?
No, I assume he moved back to New York. Yeah. We should do a well-being check. down in the first district.
Yeah, I think we should.
Mm-hmm.
I think they should. A couple of uniforms should just show up. And
I suggested that we have Gary McCarthy on the air tonight. No one responded to my email.
Because
I mean, maybe they were concerned about not having the bleep button available now that he's got nothing left to lose. But that guy is colorful and entertaining, and certainly has a unique perspective
and speaks his mind.
Yeah, that's everything we're looking for in a TV pundit.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, now he's going to be in.
If he turns up with you on that other place, I'm going to be even madder.
I can't speak to that.
Mm-hmm.
Fox 32. I can't speak to that.
Wow.
What do you mean? I mean, you know that he is going
to
be there?
I can't speak to it. I actually don't know who I just got a text from the producer of it going, hey, maybe you should be here at 8 to strategize. I'm like, I don't know.
They're putting a whole hour's worth of thought into it. Meanwhile, we will have already been on the air for 4.5 hours at that point.
Hey, I think we got Empire tonight. So I think that's...
Wow. Speaking of ratings winners.
Yeah. So I think we got...
Great lead-in.
I think we got some other stuff going on, if you know what I mean.
I hear you.
That's what's
nice. Got it.
So we're covering it all for you. Our coverage begins from 4 and then at 7 o'clock tonight. Like I said, Joe and Michael will be at the Big Kids table on WGN. Lourdes and I, we have this great technology. It's a touchscreen that allows us to see the votes come in. We'll be able to look ward by ward where the support is.
Nice.
We'll be able to keep track of these.
What'd you pay for that?
I think it was $19.95
at
Lowe's.
Can I get that?
No, just back the truck up out front and take it over to that other place.
You're going to go all John King on us. I love it.
It's my goal.
CNN with his big board.
My goal.
I love that.
Turn your back. John King does it like this. He turns his back on the camera.
Yeah.
So you only see like his backside. And then he just turns his head around like he's on a red carpet, like he's a Kardashian on a red carpet.
No, that's how you get the thinner arm, I think.
It's very slimming. It's a slimming look.
Not for him, but he does. He turns around and he's like,
hey, what's he starting with?
Hey, I got this over here. Wait, hold on. Look at what happened in Kansas here. Now look at what happened in the Kansas City, Kansas ward.
Third precinct right next to Jebediah's farm.
But yeah, somehow he knows every county, what they're called, and what the breakdown of the voting population is.
I don't want to be John King. I want to be the guy in the flight simulator for like a week after every plane disaster. And I just
Martin
found
Savage.
Out. Yes.
Yeah.
Anna Belleval did a great fun around town thing up at Extreme Flight Simulator, I think it's called. It's up in Gurnee. And they have like a full 737 simulator that the public can go in. So that's the role I want to have in TV coverage.
Sounds like a road trip for you two.
Yeah,
you two
aviation
geeks.
We should totally do it, bro. Yeah. Absolutely.
You guys can both geek out next to each other.
We crash that thing within 3 minutes as we fight for control. We're all going, now I've got more hours in Flight Simulator. Damn it, I need to be the captain. Go get me a drink, Ben.
Exactly.
You're not even worth. Go be the engineer. But there is no engineer on a 737.
That is my. That's the name of my private company, Bottle of Throttle Incorporated. All right.
Bro's going to show up in the full uniform.
Exactly. Right. It's totally true. I totally understand. I have the whole thing. I got the John Travolta faked out captain's uniform.
Anna, will you be watching WGN tonight,
clear? I will be doing that, and I'll be listening to Justin here on WGN radio at the same time, sort of a simulcast thing going on, but I do look forward to your coverage tonight.
Take that, Rokan.
I'll be watching Channel 9, too. Don't worry about it. All right, thank you. Goodbye.
Bye, Ben.
Bye.
Have fun tonight.
All right. Right now, we've got Kim Gordon standing by. She's got the WGN News coming your way in, too. It is the Rokan Show with Anna DeBlantis.
It is
Election Day here in Chicago, and that's a call for hijinks.
There's always some sort of nonsense to follow on these days, historically.
Yes, there is, and today is not unlike all those other days of nonsensical nonsensory that's going on. Now, I spoke earlier with a gentleman with whom we are familiar, who has had a very interesting, although I would say, Chicago story we have heard before from voting today. His name is Lee Bialik. He lives on the southwest side of the city of Chicago. And Lee went to his polling place today. And Lee, I'm going to let you pick up the rest of this. You went to your polling place to go cast a vote. And what happened?
So, Ro, I get to the polling place, and I give the lady my name, and she says, sir, you voted early. And I said, I'm sorry, but that's impossible. I haven't voted. I voted early in the primary. And but I didn't. I haven't voted in a runoff election. She goes, well, she had an iPad with a computer listing, and she said, no, it says here you voted. And it didn't say when or where, and because I asked her about that, and she couldn't have been nicer. She called up the Board of Election, and they got an attorney on there, and I talked to him. We were on a speaker call, and he was nice and said, well, then you can vote provisional voter affidavit. You know, but, you know, there's no guarantee that that vote will be counted. I have to check on a website, according to the directions here, to see if my vote will be counted. So, being angry, I followed through on what they wanted me to do at the polling place, and I called the ward office, and I got a call back from the ward office, and they did a little bit of a background investigation, and they told me that I voted last Tuesday, March 26th, at Mount Greenwood Park, which was an early voting station. I said, well, have you any tricks? Since I was in Arizona, and I don't think we've perfected the Star Trek Beam Me Down Scotty yet. So I was in Arizona.
That, by the way, somebody... I want to point something out. That's a Mount Greenwood response right there.
Really?
That you just gave.
They're like, are you sure?
Kind of, right, that's the kind of thing you'd hear. Hey, when do we do this? Yeah, beam me down Scotty over by here. What the?
I mean, I'm like, so, you know, I made a few more phone calls, and, you know, I made a formal complaint with the voter registration. I documented, I took the guy's name and everything like that. So now I just have to wait and see what they do. Just before I got on the air with you, a friend of mine who's working for the Board of Elections, I guess as a poll watcher or something, she's a retired police sergeant, she asked. She told me that my incident was the only one. So maybe it's just human error. I don't know. I can't say. I mean, but I hope it gets investigated because, I mean, you always hear these stories and there's always the jokes going around about, you know, dead people voting in Chicago. Like, well, I was on vacation. I guess
right.
I voted.
A vacationing voter. That's also what can happen here. Well, you know, yeah. And you wonder, you know, the thing for me, Lee, in a situation like this is that, you know, you wonder, right now, who's the better dirty trickster here? Obviously, everybody's capable of dirty tricks. And you know, just because Tony's been in the business longer than, you know, has Lori Lightfoot, it does seem to me that you know, the odds are it's more on a, you know, it's more like leaning toward a Tony than it is a Lori. But Lori's hired a bunch of people of late, right, that are working for other campaigns want to go work for. So you never mm-hmm. really know for sure where
yeah,
the fix
I mean,
is in.
Like I said, obviously I wasn't there. I don't know what happened. You know, hopefully an investigation turns up that it was human error. But maybe it's something that needs to be looked into. You know, did anybody else vote and they weren't there?
Well,
you
that's
know,
a good
I
point.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Did they tell
I
you
mean,
who you
is,
Lee? Did they tell you who you voted for?
No, they
can
couldn't
they
tell me that?
You want to keep that vote or
yeah.
not?
Yeah. Is that what you wanted?
See, back in the old day, they could do that. Do you vote for Daley yeah. or Daley? Which one did you vote for?
Yeah. So I'm going to protect my right to vote, but I mean, I take my voter privilege very seriously.
Sure.
My father,
good for you.
My father served in Korea, and my son served in Iraq to protect our freedoms, you know, and so I take it very seriously, my voting rights. I vote in every election, and I mean, this particular one as well. I mean, it's obviously highly contested. I've seen the ads on TV, which are pretty unbelievable, but the bottom line is, you know, I just want to make sure that, you know, my vote gets counted.
All right, there you go. Lee, thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thanks
Ro.
Yeah.
We'll talk
Anna,
to you.
Anna, take care.
You too.
See you around.
See you.
Bye-bye now.
All right, bye-bye.
Thanks for sharing his story. I'm glad that you put that out there, because now if there are others who've witnessed a similar thing, if this is just an error and it's kind of a thing that just sort of happened,
mm-hmm.
that's one thing. If this is more of, if there is a more volume of people who will find this today, I think that's a huge issue. But we'll see.
He should have asked for a description of the voter who voted for him last week. A rather tall lady. She always wears blue. She's wearing blue. Sort of salt and pepper hair and sensible shoes.
Yeah. For years, my dad appeared on the rolls after he was dead, and it just it bothered us.
Okay,
it bothered us.
But that's, you see, that's an interesting thing, because I've had relatives appear on the rolls too. It doesn't mean that they're actually getting voted on, though. Now,
it doesn't. It's open for fraud when you have that many people who don't show up for years and years and years, and you've already told the Board of Elections that they are passed away and no longer with us.
Mm-hmm.
They should, within a certain reasonable amount of time, be removed from the privilege of voting.
Now, one would think. What kind of squeaky wheel, pain in the A kind of move is that to call
it
the Board of Elections every year and tell them someone's dead? Why are you wasting their time with that?
My mom did it. I wasn't doing it, but still.
Why would she waste everybody's time with something like this? Some small detail like that.
Because every time she showed up to vote, they would say, hey, is Nick voting this year? Is Nick going to come? And my mom like, no.
Okay, put Nick down.
Exactly what it seemed like was, I mean, this is
guys
right.
Writing on a yellow pad, Nick DeVlantis. All right, we got to vote for that.
Yeah, we got that one.
Yeah, okay, write that down. Hey, Johnny, write that down.
I laugh.
How do you spell that?
Lee's rights.
Oh, man. N-I-C-K, Johnny. N-I-C-K. No, I mean the other one. Forget it. It's Chicago.
Yeah.
I would love to know the details of who he voted for. You know, quote.
Who did Lee vote for?
You know,
the guy that we just talked to?
Whoever.
Oh, the other person.
For him.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
See, now with a name like Lee, that's a good one. Because Lee could go either way.
Right? Yeah.
Maybe
true.
You're looking for Pats and Lees and
Chris's.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. See, look for, think about that. Think
you seem
about
too familiar
that.
With this, Ro.
What? I'm not the what? What are you talking about?
How do you know all this stuff?
What do you mean?
Huh?
What are you asking a question like that for? Again, what kind of a pain in the ass are you doing? What do you want to be?
Suspicious.
Huh? There's a lot of questions around here. I don't like people to ask a lot of questions. That's what they do at the polling place. There used to be. Now, you know, we talked last week about state's attorneys, you know, who that's their job is to sit in a car and drive around and press charges against people, felony review. You know, state's attorneys are all the guys who work in the state's attorney's office, men and women who work in the state's attorney's office, are assigned to polling places.
Mm-hmm.
And they have to go there. And they have to go and kind of work through these things. Now, I don't know if Kim Fox is sending anybody there. They're all working real hard. Still working on the Jussie Smollett situation. They're making
erasing
sure,
the files.
Right, they're erasing the files. They're shredding. They got a guy with a big magnet, and they're trying to demagnetize
Smollett
hard drives.
We have no record of anything on Smollett.
They just dumped entire computer systems into the river in case it's got Smollett's name on it. I don't know what happened over by there either.
Never changed.
God, my blood pressure is up dramatically. That's all I would like to say about today.
I'm so happy Lee shared his story. And look, anybody else has anything like that happened, let us know. Because that's serious. If that's just a small error, that's one thing. If there are more of these, then that's a big deal. That's all I'm saying about that.
Yeah. I mean, I guess the list of suspects is as long as your arm, right?
There aren't
I mean,
that many people running. There aren't that many campaigns to investigate on this one. There's, 15 aldermanic races. There's two candidates for mayor and a runoff and a treasurer.
And where he voted, because he already said where he called the ward office.
Greenwood.
Mount Greenwood. So his alderman wasn't up for...
No, right.
You know,
that would be O'Shea.
He's already in. That's a done deal. How you doing? And so...
And there's high voter turnout in that ward. They've already reported.
Right. That's the only ward that there's high voter turnout. That's how Jerry Joyce ended up almost winning the thing.
It's like, who?
Because Jerry got everybody to vote in that ward for him. And that ward shows up. The northwest side and the southwest side show up.
They do. They do.
It's, you know, people who are city workers and employees and things like that. Now, you do have a lot of people in that ward also who are in county government. So I don't know if they want to see continuation of the fine services of county government as they have been practiced by the president of the county board, Tony Preckwinkle, who I will admit is certainly a step up from Todd Stroger. I mean, I will say that you know, does seem to have greater competency than does Todd Stroger. Although if I had to play Minecraft with somebody, it would certainly be Todd Stroger and not her. I'll bet he's really good at Fortnite now. Don't you think he's like a Fortnite champion?
He can do that dance flossing.
Right.
I'd love to see that. The floss off.
Maybe we'll put him in some sort of like E-Olympics kind of thing, right? Where you can go, that would be good. Representing Chicago, 14 years old, from South Shore, please welcome Todd Stroger.
Hey, I'm 44.
Okay, whatever.
We haven't heard from him in a while.
No, it's okay.
Okay.
No, I'm
okay.
You were welcome. No, I'm fine with that. All right, let's check in now. Let's talk to Kim, find out what's happening at the top of the hour.
Ro, the polls are open in Chicago until 7. They just need some voters.
No?
No, I do not have anything to contribute at this moment.
All right. Thank you. Thank you very much. Apparently, the prosecution has just rested here on the show. Coming up in the 4 o'clock hour, I'm glad you asked, we're going to find out from Mr. Skilling how long this warmth is going to last and how warm it's really going to get. You know, I heard hear tell of a temperature in the not-too-distant future.
Crazy.
That has an 8 in it.
Wow. I heard a 7, but an 8 is even
I heard an 8. Do I hear an 8? Do I hear a 9? I got an 8 here. Do I hear a 9? Let me just tell you, today was beautiful.
Oh, yeah.
I got a little milky in the afternoon. I hate the milky skies. I hate the white sky. Mm-hmm. Chicago, too much white sky in Chicago. But I would say this is pretty good. This is pretty good, my friends. So, all right. We'll talk to Mr. Skilling about that. And also coming up, we got Hawks tickets to give away as they take on the Stars on Friday. And 60 crazy things that happened at O'Hare that you may not have heard about.
Oh, no.
I don't have a lot of time to get through all 60, but I'll tell you that, the top 10 are pretty good. Concho with Anna Duplantis,
yes.
Right here on 720 WGN.
Mm-hmm.
Tom Skilling joins us right now from his weather lair.
The weather lair?
The weather lair. And it's brought to you by Permaseal Basement Systems.
We call this Weather Studio 54 around here.
Right.
Oh, wow.
It's a dance party every
yeah,
day.
Yeah. Anna got us going yesterday.
We did. We had a little, what do we have? Yeah. Rick Astley.
Yeah. Oh, you got Rickrolled?
You got Rickrolled,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Just, that's something.
And
right
we
there.
Had not one of Rick's tunes. We had three of them.
There
so.
Are three Rick Astley tunes?
Oh,
I was not aware.
You know them all, too, yeah. Ro. You'd yeah. be able to sing along.
Yeah. I'm sure.
Know. Don't you?
Sure.
Bill Snyder was dancing here in the office. It mm-hmm. was a sight.
Shirtless.
It was a sight to see.
Jagger was holding his chest.
That's it.
Oh, poor Mick. Too soon.
I know.
Hope he's okay.
Well, I was okay.
They say he's going to be back to a full schedule.
Well,
so.
Okay. Maybe. I hope so.
I do, too.
I had not seen them. I thought, they're the only major act, I think, in music, you know, from that long-term right. legacy thing
yes.
that I have not seen. And, I should do that. Of all of the acts in music that I've not seen, it's ridiculous that I haven't seen the Rolling Stones.
I haven't either.
So, I'm going to go. I'm going to go to this one. And, you know, back in 1979, they based their tour here. That was the craziest thing.
That is
They were based in Chicago.
And you didn't get to see it?
And they would satellite out. They did, like, 4 shows that summer
wow.
here, but they would satellite out to other cities
I
from here.
Just because
yeah.
of the natural
the airport.
Center of the
yeah.
country? Okay.
Yeah, mm-hmm. and it was because they had their own plane, and they would just... And they just said they had a hotel. They were in a hotel.
In Wisconsin?
No.
That place? No.
No, no. Here.
Okay.
They were in a hotel
place
here.
In Wisconsin they liked, too. Mm-hmm.
That was... It was right. It was either the Tremont or the Whitehall. I can't remember. It was one or the other. Right there in, mm-hmm. you know, in the Gold Coast.
Yeah.
And they were, you know, you could see them, like, walking around.
Wow.
And they're fun-sized. So it was not hard to identify them. You're like, oh, look, there's a 12-year-old. Oh, no, that's Mick Jagger.
You know, I saw something on Facebook pass by as I was working today. And it was, who was the drummer? Fellow's been
Charlie.
With him forever. And he was shirtless in the window. They were saying, you know, get
Charlie ladies. Watts, the drummer?
No. It wasn't. It must not have been the drummer then. Who's the other with...
Keith Richards?
Keith Richards. Yeah. I couldn't think of Keith's name.
Sorry.
But, yeah.
Pirate.
Yeah. And it was a sight to see. Keith with, you know, all I can think is... I suppose when you've been doing this as long as he has,
yeah.
you just don't really give a darn what anybody
well,
thinks.
Yeah, and
you
when know. You're on the heroin, anything sounds good, right? I mean, it's like you don't have to eat, you don't have to,
yeah.
you don't have to do anything. It's sort of like you're just happy being on the heroin.
But you know what? Thank goodness he's still around because I think he's had some rough moments.
Oh, I'd say so. Yes.
Yeah, yeah. yeah.
And it's amazing that he. I mean, I want whatever he's having because
yeah. seriously,
he is capable of. He's you know he's 70 years old.
Yeah,
70 something years old.
Yeah,
he's you know had terrible addiction throughout his life.
Yes,
smoked the entire time.
Sure,
he's you can't kill him. And that was the thing. I worried about these guys going out on tour anyway.
Oh,
Charlie Watts, who was the drummer, who was actually older than them. He's over 80 now.
Wow.
Charlie retired. Charlie retired, I'd say, like in
well,
the
Well, I would guess in 80.
In the
it's
early
about
2000s.
Time. Yeah. Because that's a rough life.
Yeah. And I don't think he ever really liked the life. Yeah. You know, he wasn't like clearly Keith Richards liked the life.
Yeah.
Right. Clearly, Mick. I think Mick's more of a business guy. And also, Mick has a baby every 2 years, whether he likes it or not.
Mm-hmm.
So whether he knows it or not. So he's got
to keep the income coming in. Yeah.
He's got bills. Yeah. Right.
So, although I suspect he's got a little stashed away after all these years.
One would hope.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, I remember when they first came out, I listened to them. I thought, this group is going nowhere. And that shows what I know. You know, and here they are, one of the biggest acts still around. You know, they even
the
are going.
The biggest act still around.
What's
right?
that?
The biggest act still around.
Yeah.
The only one that's left.
It's true.
From that, you know, that started in the 1960s, that is fully formed and can still sell out stadiums wherever they go.
Yeah.
You know, well, Elton John, Elton John started in the early 70s. So, you know, it's pretty close.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. An amazing thing.
Well, that's the thing. They had to cancel the tour because of his heart issue. And it's like they're still touring in their mid 70s.
I know.
Right.
These guys.
It's amazing.
So they said he's going to have, they said surgery or a procedure. I mean, if he's getting stents or something like that, they're going, you know, like an angioplasty kind of deal. Well, then it's not
as invasive, right?
Right. And they're probably right. Maybe he can get that done.
Yeah.
But, you know, they're opening it up and pulling it out and, you know, squeegeeing it out. I think that might be a problem.
What are
you doing that thing like you do, like, you know,
squeeging.
Yeah. They do that thing.
So...
Or they stick those. You know, like when you're cleaning your glasses in the sink and you got that round thing.
Yeah, you got to get in there. Yeah.
You know, I never thought to compare open heart surgery with
I think they do that. They kind of clean the thing out, blow through it, put it back in.
That's what they do.
Yeah,
sure.
That's
whatever
terrible.
It's going to be. Yeah,
jeez.
Run the water through. Hey, put this under the sink.
But who would think that Mick Jagger would be the one to undergo the surgery? What about Keith Richards? He seems to be the one who doesn't take care of himself.
Doesn't make any sense.
You know what? I saw a repeat of Saturday Night Live a couple weeks ago, and he was there. You know, he had appeared on that show. I'm telling you, he never stops. He puts on a heck of a show.
Oh, he's amazing.
That's a form of exercise that, you know, would probably leave most of us, you know, laying on the floor. He really goes, you know, puts himself into that. And it's probably good. He's probably in.
Probably what keeps him around.
Keeps him going.
And he does. They showed a picture of him. Did you see this picture on the internet?
Of,
like, the first picture since they announced he was leaving for the.
Yeah.
And it was with, I think, his current wife/girlfriend, whatever she is.
Uh-huh.
She looks like she's 30. And he looked like her kid. I mean, that was the funny thing. It was like, oh, there's a mom with her 12-year-old.
Yeah.
And it's
yeah.
like, wait a second.
That's Mick Jagger.
Oh, that's Mick Jagger. and you're like, wait, how does he do that?
What did we say that Mick was? We've looked at this before.
We have. I think he's
72 or?
No, I think he's older than
74.
That.
74.
74.
Wow.
74. And, but I think, you know, there is a reality to being smaller. All of those guys are diminutive.
They call them fun sized.
All the fun. The Rolling Stones are all fun sized. They're you know, 5'6" 5'7"
Interesting.
You know, super thin.
Yeah.
Probably weigh 130 to 140 pounds. I'm just doing this like it's a police lineup.
You know,
white male, 5'6" 5'7" 130
140
pounds.
I looked on Bill Maher's show a couple of months ago. He listed all these exercise guys who had put out books and all, Jim Fix and
all dead.
People like that. Yeah. And he goes through all of them and with the date of their death, mm-hmm. you know, the age of their death. And he ends up with David Crosby, you know, still going strong and, you know, is.
And he's pumping out the kids, too.
Yeah.
Although that's very intentional, though, because he's doing it by way of test tube.
And there usually has been a drug intervention required, you know, stuff like that. And yet he's going fine and has a smile on his face.
We
lost Jim Fix at, 56 or something? And he was the. And you know, the exercise guru.
Right, he was right. He wrote books
who
about
made us all feel guilty about not living life the way he has.
Yes, exactly. Now he's DEAD dead.
No.
I went to a show with David Crosby years ago where he was performing. It was a private event that he'd gotten hired to do.
Yeah.
And so we're sitting there, and it's maybe in front of 100 people, maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe even fewer.
Wow.
And, you know, in a tight little space.
Mm-hmm.
And he's up there, and all of a sudden he starts telling this like wacky story about how he just found out that he had a kid, and that the kid is an adult now. And the kid is like, and I didn't realize it until like 3 weeks ago that I was his dad, and now, and I'd like to introduce it to him. He's playing the bass, and everybody turns around, and literally in this room, like 100 people, and it felt because it was like on a big stage. Yeah. You go, oh, it's part of the act. Jeez. But in a room with 100 people, you're like, oh my God.
Yeah.
Everybody started to get uncomfortable, and they're like, it's like when like you're at someone's house and the couple starts to fight,
right.
And you're like, I don't want to be around this. That's the way, and everybody's like that. And then about a third of the way through the show, somebody got on their phone.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, don't ever do that with David Crosby performing. He stopped in the middle of the song, started yelling at the guy, I don't get on the phone. I don't start singing while you're on the phone in your office, do
oh, no.
I?
You know what? I can understand that.
I totally got it.
Remember what the Barbara Streisand concert? Yeah, remember there was a guy
Let's
in the front row.
Not in front of the kids. Oh, God, yeah.
There was a guy in the front Please. Row, and she said, and she's singing the Open to Evergreen and saying, somebody important you're talking to? And, you know, she would interject that between the, in the musical, over the musical bed, and it was singing on the way, and you know, I thought, you know, that is pretty rude.
I know,
to be sitting there.
It is incredibly
if you're spending
rude.
Several hundred dollars to be at the concert.
Oh, why would you be on the phone?
Well, that's true. Why would you be?
And you're annoying the people around you, too. I mean, that's the thing. Is
yeah.
I was at a concert a couple of years ago where there was a woman in the row who was just kept talking at the top of her lungs in the middle of the songs. And I had to lean over like two people and go, can you please respect the artist? Please respect the artist!
Was that before or after you started sobbing uncontrollably?
That was not a nice concert. No, it was at a much more manly concert. It was Elton John.
yeah, we don't cry at Elton John covers.
Oh, I've done that too.
I probably would because you know, you look at these performers that you've grown up with, and you just say to yourself, "My God, these people are iconic."
Yes,
you know, just we're watching a little piece of history and watching these people perform.
I can't get through Harmony. The song Harmony when he does that
lovely.
In concert.
I know.
I just love
and he
music.
When he does that song
it's
and
true.
It's and because it reminds me of my childhood and it's like it sort of takes you to this place.
I know that
if only if you had that album did you ever hear, because you never heard that song on the radio and it was the last song on Goodbye Obrick Road, and it's sort of like, and I get a little wistful during that. I'm not gonna lie to you.
I know.
I'm an emotional concert goer, okay?
I do that with Tumbleweed Connection. You know, he had Where To Now, St. Peter. Yeah. Remember that one? And
My Father's Gun. You know, if he ever does My Father's Gun in concert, forget about it.
Right.
Mine is Tonight. Elton John's Tonight.
Yeah.
Oh, love that
song. Know, Anna, the one good thing about crying all through a concert is you can't get on the phone and bother anybody else, you know? It's just impossible to maneuver. Your eyes are clouded with tears, and so you can't dial. And so it works out really in a very positive way.
Very moving. It's part of the human experience, right?
It
just
is.
Connecting
it
to the
is.
Music and getting those pinch me moments when you get to see icons
it's
on
true.
Stage. It just
you just think,
good.
How did they ever become so proficient at what they do? Oh no,
the is journey.
Oh no.
Anna, do you have the tissues?
I do. I need them.
Good,
I do
the
love
box.
Him, John.
Yeah.
I think he's so good live too. He never lets down. Even at you know, he's 74 too.
Oh, how do these people's minds come up with hit after hit? It's incredible.
Here we go. Forget about it.
I want to see him.
Oh, Kevin, this is just like A Star Is Born.
Well, you two can't get through that.
Yeah.
A Star Is Born.
Every time. You know what's interesting, too? His musical style is, and this is true of so many iconic figures, is so unique. I mean, it's a mix of things they've heard, artists that they've respected and whose work, but it is so uniquely them.
Country,
you know?
Blues, New Orleans. Yeah. All of those genres,
an amalgam of all these different genres. It's no wonder
country music. It was Bernie Taupin who wrote the lyrics. Did a lot of like country-ish. He was a gigantic, like, American West and country fan and all that. So he was, so there's a lot of stuff that's got that sort of a twangy feel to it, but they found the blues rhythm in it. And he's, I don't know, just don't get me started.
The stories you just connect with and their music.
Lyrics are different. Well, that's all true. The great bands, whether it's them or the Rolling Stones, The Who, U2, you know, up through now, right? I mean, Mumford and Sons, you know, we were talking about last week.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you get every time you get to the next level, it's they're writing about something smarter, interesting.
Yeah.
You know, that was like the Black Crowes. I found that, you know. She Talks to Angels. It's just one of those songs where you're like, oh, my God. That just hits the mark exactly right. You know exactly what he's talking about.
Yeah.
So, anyway. All right, listen. I could sit around here and we can talk music all day long, no. But they're not paying either of us to do that.
No,
I know.
So, we'll get a podcast for that later, Tom.
Yeah. Well, we had to.
Is it going to be raining? We got the Sox opener on Thursday. We're very concerned about this now.
I am concerned. Steve called me and wants to talk to me in the morning, and I know I'll be grilled then. You know, all right, now here's the game. Begins at this time. Will it be raining at that moment and all? And it's...
What is it?
It looks like off and on stuff, but...
Heavy?
Enough to be more than a nuisance, but there'll be moments where it's not raining, too. The problem is there'll be a strong east wind, and it'll be chilly.
Oh, so, God.
You know,
this time of year, it's always like
that. I know. Our lake, if we could just... We've got to put that tarp out, Ro.
Mm-hmm. Or a dome. How fast can we build a dome over a guaranteed rate?
I know. I tell you.
They can't catch a break with the weather.
No, remember last year? Kopech,
it's rained every time he pitched.
Hey, by the way, I passed Wrigley today, and they're really pulling down all the barriers. It's really starting. So I was wondering how they're going to get ready for their home opener. But it's
did they put solid gold around it? Because I thought that was the next thing the Rickets were going to do.
I know.
They're going to gild the actual entire stadium.
I know. That whole area is amazing.
It is amazing.
It's been transformed.
Beautiful hotel, and the whole thing is very nice.
Yeah.
And people are afraid, you're going to make it into Ricketsville. Okay, it was, there was a donut shop and a McDonald's.
Yeah.
It's like, and a bunch of
and a Taco Bell, which I see is gone now.
I missed that.
Yeah, they just moved the Taco Bell.
I do miss that. I saw it's gone.
Yeah, that was my sneak late night.
Well, there aren't that many of them in the city, so that was a nice one right there.
I know. I was surprised.
Nice, but it was one right there.
It was a pretty fast drive through.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we'll be watching out for that. Although, I thought you did a nice performance today. I thought you acquitted yourself well today, Tom.
Oh, did I? Well, that's good.
Nice day. Feels very springy. Feels very, like, late April.
Yeah. And tomorrow will be up to 61.
There'll be some
hours of sunshine before we cloud over later in the day.
Yeah, what is this milky stuff that's happening all over us?
Well, you know, that happens this time of the year. If you get warm air to run up here, there's a little cool air left down in the low levels. You cut out the mixing that goes on, and so you get a buildup of, as you say, this milky type.
Yeah, milky skies.
Stuff. Yeah.
I hate the white sky. Well, this city, do we do too much time in the white sky?
We do.
By the way, that's from Elton John's third album.
Sounded like it might be a Beatles cut, too, you know, from the White Album or something.
All right. Thank you, Tom.
See you guys.
Tomorrow.
All right.
Let's check in now with Kim. What's happening in the news at the bottom of the hour?
Will the public see the file in the Jussie Smollett case? We won't know for a while.
It's the Ro Khan Show with Anna DeBlancis right here, 720 WGN.
Mm-hmm.
All right, kids. Stay close. I got Hawks tickets to give away for a game that may be the most important of the season on Friday, April 5th. Now, we're going to be out there tomorrow.
Mm.
Is that correct, that we're going to be out there tomorrow?
Yeah, out there tomorrow.
Did I read that somewhere?
You did. You saw the memo.
Okay.
Confirmed.
And we're doing our last stadium show of the year, of the season, of the Hawks season, unless they make the playoffs, and then we'll be there for every home game.
We will. And you know what always happens when we're at the UC when the Hawks are playing.
Right. They win.
They win.
Now, what we do need here, though, I'd just like to make a point.
Sure.
It's a minor point, but it's a point nonetheless.
It's also a minor miracle.
We do need the Colorados to lose now for their remaining three games.
Mm-hmm.
0 points. No ties. I can't have them going to overtime.
If they get 1 point, it's over.
After 60 minutes of play, they must lose. The other team, as I explained to Jeremy Colleton, the Blackhawks head coach, the team with the most amount of points at the end of 60 minutes wins.
Right.
Right.
And he wrote that down, and he went to the big whiteboard in the locker room, gave his pep talk to the boys, and says, boys,
yeah, I just learned
Rokon had a hell of a lesson for us that we've been completely overlooking for decades in the hockey world.
Well, that team had certainly been overlooking it for the eight games prior to him being there. So
yeah, at that point, they were. Yeah.
It was back to basics. Yeah.
Now, on top of the Avalanche having to lose, they also have to jump the Coyotes and Wild. So if the Coyotes get 3 points over the final three games, it's...
Don't confuse me.
Okay. Fine. I just go with that one, then. The other ones don't matter, although they do, but we're going to hang
on. So you're saying we got a chance.
There's a chance. They're alive.
Yeah, no, he's not really saying that.
No, that's how I read it.
That's the funny thing.
No, there is a chance.
There's a chance.
There is definitely a chance.
Crazier things have happened.
Yep.
I can't think of any.
Well,
you know, like...
Just do some scoreboard watching tonight and root against the Avalanche and the Coyotes in the Wild.
Yeah. Yeah, listen, just to get us through tomorrow's show. all I really need, I hate to make this about us, but all we really need right now is we need the Avalanche to lose tonight in regulation.
That's the biggest one.
So that tomorrow we can over-promote what's happening in front of us.
Either way, it's the Blues, and people love to just go hate on the Blues.
Sure.
Gotta hate the worst.
Hey, Lauren gets it. She knows how to hype the game up.
But the Blues...
Detroit sucks, but St. Louis blows. Just remember that.
They're the new big rival because we play them a lot more.
Right. Mm-hmm. They're the only really rival that's like a traditional rival. And you also have that Cubs-Cardinals rivalry that kind of leads you to an informed hatred of St. Louis.
Right.
With the exception of the beer that we do like. But the rest, I'm not so sure about. The Arch.
Their pizza kind of blows, too.
Yeah. And they, you know, they go, oh, look at our downtown. I'm like, where is it?
Right, it's like two blocks.
How come no one lives here? Or goes there after 5 o'clock?
That's a great point. It's kind of a ghost town. And
as Harry Carey would say, you can shoot a cannon through the streets down here. Although I will say the new Busch Stadium is beautiful, they built a little bar area around it that has two bars in it.
But they're huge.
They are huge.
It's really cool, actually, right by the ballpark.
Yeah, and the Arch, I got to tell you, the Arch is, it's an arch. I mean, once you've seen it, you know, you can't, once you've been there and you see it the first time, it's not like you can go back and go, I got to go see that again.
No.
Have you ever gone up in it?
I have not gone
I
up
in it. I'm a little claustrophobic.
In a capsule or something.
That's what I'm worried about. I've avoided that.
It's cool, but it's kind of a long ride.
Yeah.
It's a few minutes, but for being in a small space.
Right, and then you're up at the top of an arch, and you're like, oh, cool. And then you could be...
it's not like the Statue of Liberty.
It's like you're looking, you get up there, and you look, and you go, oh my God, there's East St. Louis.
It's not like the view's worth the climb, right?
East St. Louis, don't look.
Exactly. Don't look that way, look that way.
Let's go this way. All right, hold on.
Everybody, direct your attention in this direction.
Oh, there's Ladue.
Yes.
And then you're like, okay, can I turn around now? Where do I go?
But that's the thing. You try and find multiple things to look at to make it worth the grueling minutes to get up there and then the wait to get back down.
How long is the whole trip when you do that?
That's a good question. It's been a while. It was
5-7 minutes, right?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, it's long because you're standing next to a guy from central Missouri who's in a cutoff T-shirt.
With jean shorts.
Where he's got the big hoop under his armpit. And there's his first roll of fat is coming through the hoop of his armpit. And he's wearing it with the St. Louis Cardinal on the front of it. We're going to go up now. This is the first time we've ever been in an elevator. So now, which way did the thing go? It's that guy. And you're like next to him, and he smells a little bit like cigarettes and high karate.
Jean shorts and like lawn stained and New Balances.
30 years of alcohol.
Flip flops,
right?
Mm-hmm. With hair on the feet.
Flip flops, wearing socks and flip flops.
Yeah,
and cutoff jeans, or not even cutoff jeans, like jeans,
shorts,
right? They go right below the knee. And his wife also wearing the same cardinal sort of stained cardinal's dress, except in a long cotton version of it that goes to about her ankles. All right, now I'm up and scared. This ain't gonna fit. Not gonna feel like we're going up or going down. I don't know which way we're going. And then when they get to say, look at East St. Louis, look at that. They none of that. Now, that's Democrats over there. So I just want to say that we got to beat the Blues on Wednesday. That's all I'm saying.
Okay. Woo! Phew. Got there. All right. And your pizza is terrible.
Yeah.
St. Louis.
And basically, the entire experience in St. Louis is terrible. But it is, but it is what it is. Although you go to the suburbs, but the suburbs in Detroit are nice, too.
Mm-hmm.
They're like, oh, look at our suburbs. And they're like, I don't really care. Everybody's suburbs are exactly the same. There's a Panera Bread, right?
there's Fridays.
There's a Starbucks that has got like a little drive-through.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's got a couple nice little banks that have just gotten bought up by all the bigger banks.
And some trees.
And trees, yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. And some nice houses. That they're exact same houses in every suburb everywhere in America. You might as well be in, you know, Highland Park, Texas, or Frontenac, Missouri, or, you know, you name it around Detroit. Bloomfield Hills. It's all the same. Not around here,
it's
my
not
friend.
Chicago.
No. And they're like, oh, and like the people in St. Louis say, well, you know, we compete a lot with Chicago. And we're like, where are you again? It's the way that we look at New York. You know, we look at, hey, yeah, we're the second city right behind New York. And then New York is like, okay, now I once had a conversation.
You're a flyover country, right?
Yeah. Well, I had a conversation with a woman at a bar in New York. I will never forget this conversation. She goes, where are you from? I said, Chicago. She goes, oh, that's like 100 miles north of here, right? I'm like, no, it's not. No.
Oh, gee.
It's not.
And they talk about it like it's sort of a quaint little town.
Yeah.
That's a nice place, isn't it? To
shootings,
live.
Right? Isn't that what goes on there?
Yeah.
That's shootings. Yeah, that's what you're known for. All right. But we're also known for our airport.
We are.
And while city officials have boasted that O'Hare is getting safer and safer and safer, the Sun-Times found 60 alarming things that have happened at O'Hare.
Oh, gee. Can't wait to hear these.
Now, this is 22 of these happened in 2017, 26 in 2018. And there have been 14 since October 1st of these kinds of incidents. There's been a dozen incidents involving city workers actually either driving across or standing on active runways.
Oh, God. Is this where I turn to park?
Oops.
How does that happen?
All right, listen. We got to take a break. Just head over there. Just keep going. Don't worry. We'll beat the plane. Don't worry about it. It's like guys who want to beat the train, you know, that's going across. Don't worry. I got it. We're fine. On May 26th of 2017, city workers who plan to mow grass on the airfield requested access to do so and have been told to remain clear. But a controller then observed the vehicles mowing up to the edge of the runway.
Oh, gee.
Now, do they not realize they're going to get sucked into an engine?
It's kind of a busy airport.
Or blown away by the jet wash? I mean, it's... What? What?
Unbelievable.
Last September, a city worker drove onto 22 Wright, which was active at the time, but didn't currently have an airplane on it. Well, I guess that's good news. This is a pretty crazy thing.
Totally.
I always see those things zipping around. You know, when you're, you know, I'm like such a geek. I've always got my face up to the window in an airplane.
Oh, when we were coming back from Arizona, he's like, yeah. Get out of my way. I get the window seat. And then he's like a kid. He's like his face glued to the window like a kid in a candy
right,
store. Just
totally.
Like, boom.
What are you looking
totally.
At?
Doesn't move the entire time.
All operations.
Well, you have to monitor it?
Yeah.
He's taking notes.
I just like to see it. I just think it's the coolest thing. The aviation, just what happens on the ground is cool. Like, think about the orchestrated choreography. Forget about the guys mowing the grass. That's a dumb thing.
Remember, that's got to be done.
Well, they were putting sheep out there for a while. And
goats.
And then the goats were getting sucked into engines. That was a problem.
Oh, I didn't hear that. That's terrible.
Issue. They had to fence the goats off. But then it would kind of ruin the whole idea of you know,
it the sounded like such a good
there.
Idea, the whole yeah. eco-friendly part of it.
Actually, the goats were deaf after 3 days.
Aww.
So it's hard to call the goats in.
Should have got them little earplugs.
You know what? I actually sold those to the city. I sold them
for
$100
a piece. Contract.
Yeah, I got a contract. I got those earplugs you put in humans, right, that you get for 10 cents. I sold them for $100 a piece to the city. These for goats.
Perfect.
They're pink. Look, they're for goats.
And they went to an active runway to deliver them.
Right, exactly. I drove right through. It's bad. It's just You know, there's, I think you do have, there's a lot going on. Very busy airport, a huge piece of land. Not everybody's going to do the right thing. I think that's what we learned.
True.
All right. Caller number 19, 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Caller number 19 rips us off for a pair of tickets to see the Hawks take on the Stars on Friday, courtesy of Four Seasons Heating, Air Conditioning, Plumbing. For all the right reasons, Four Seasons. Find them online at fourseasonsheatingcooling.com. Keep listening for your chance to win tickets from Four Seasons to a Blackhawks game. Well, it says all regular season long here, and that means one more time. Or is this it? Is Detroit the Detroit?
Two more. Wednesday, Friday, and then they got a game in Nashville over the weekend to wrap it up.
Okay, so this is the last. This was your last chance right here. Your very last chance. We want to thank Four Seasons for doing that. It's really cool. They do it every season with us, and it's amazing. Gives everybody an opportunity to get a chance to go. And it is worth seeing. They'll be back next year. Don't worry about it. No big deal. Okay, it's a big deal. Oh, God. I'm not going to breathe.
They're not out yet, Ro.
No. But I can't breathe until they're in or they're out.
Okay. That's not much longer. We'll know pretty soon.
Yeah, we may know by really 8 soon. O'clock tonight, right? What time does the Avalanche play?
That's a little bit later because
they're at home? Yeah. Denver? At the Pepsi?
After Pepsi.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
It's an 8 o'clock start. So you're going to stay up late to see that
one. Oh, God. I've got angina.
We'll have a mayor before we have an answer to the Blackhawks.
You're right. Probably
right. 7:05 tonight. This just in. Then what's Justin going to do out at Billy Goat at 7:06 tonight?
Oh, man, the grill.
Yeah.
The characters in that place on election night. That's worth it alone. Right. Just to talk to those guys.
He's going to be waiting on the 26th ward to come in terms of some aldermanic race of two people nobody's ever heard of. All right. Everybody stand by. Don't anybody move. Right now, let's check in with Kim. What's coming up at the top of the hour in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom?
Incredibly slow and extremely quiet. That's how Election Day is being described in Chicago.
It's a Roe Khan show with Anna DeVlantis. Coming up in the 5 o'clock hour, top 5 you won't believe, and A.B. Stoddard will be here to talk about the new creepy uncle, Joe Biden.
Oh,
I just want to put my hands on your shoulder. I hope you don't mind. I think it's just fine, don't you? We'll find out if people think it's just fine. I'm not quite sure if everybody's on the same page he is. It's the Roe Khan Show with Anna DeVlantis right here at 720 WGN.
Avocado prices have jumped 34% according to Bloomberg today alone as millennials run in to scoop them all up because of the border
issues. Because of the border crossing?
I don't think it's just millennials.
No, I just like to say that because I love avocados and I actually need to go to the store and scoop some up myself.
I bought 350 avocados.
See, there you go. That proves my point right
That's
there.
One big bowl of guac.
He doesn't, and he bought 16 bags of bread, which will all go bad before he can actually get to the avocados.
Avocado toast.
Bad idea for the avocado toast, yeah. Let me tell you.
It is yummy.
I do love an avocado. It's a very lovely thing. Does the president realize what kind of a crisis he's creating with avocados? And
huge.
Salsa?
It's a national emergency.
Did he think about that?
No.
He hasn't really thought about it. This is the new unbridled Trump. He doesn't have to worry about anything. He's free to go. He's going to just be what he's going to be. And it's going to be something.
Kind of feels like it's been that way since day one.
Yeah. Yeah, it does. But now for sure.
Yeah,
now it's like,
sure.
Go ahead, make my day, Congress, or whoever you are.
You know he doesn't like avocados. What the hell is that?
Oh, they're squishy and they taste like nothing. And it's like having clay in your mouth. And like, and I feel like, oh, God, what is this in my mouth? I got to spit it out.
He loves guac, but he hates avocados. He doesn't realize it.
They're connected.
It's the main ingredient.
Actually, I don't like any of it because it tastes like something.
Oh.
He only likes the taste of ketchup and gristly overcooked meat.
Chicken nuggets.
And nuggets, right. Mmm, delicious. Chicken nuggets. All right, here we go. Let's do this.
It's the top five on the Roe Khan Show.
Five.
Let's go.
Four, three, two, one.
Now,
It's the top five at five on the Rokan Show with Anna Tavlantis. Sponsored by the Hip and Knee Center, where they help you feel new again.
Ready?
Yes.
Yes.
Get on with it.
Checking in at
number five.
The president met with the head of NATO today, Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg. They were at the White House. The president took questions from reporters while alongside Mr. Stoltenberg. When asked about his threats to shut down the southern border, the president said it will have a negative impact on the economy, but who cares?
Sure, it's going to have a negative impact on the economy. It's one of the biggest trade deals in the world that we've just done with the USMCA. It's a very big trading partner. But to me, trading is very important. The borders are very important. But security is what is most important. I mean, I have to have security. This is what this gentleman is all about. And we're going to have security in this country. That's more important than trade. Hey, all you hear me talking about is trade. But let me just give you a little secret. Security is more important to me than trade.
What's more important to him than trade? I don't think I understood that from that. And when he goes, this guy, that's what this guy's talking about. Stoltenberg turned around and looked behind him like,
where?
Someone
which
behind
one?
Me?
Which guy?
What are we talking about? The, okay, well, yeah, first of all, the USMCA isn't done yet. Has been ratified by Congress, and the other two countries haven't ratified it either. So I like how he says it's all been done. He agreed to it, and he got them to agree in principle to the idea of it, but he hasn't gotten anything done. It's not official yet. And Congress probably doesn't want to take that up until well after 20. Everything's going to get pushed after 2020 now. I'd like to do it now, but we're going to wait till after 2020 because I'd like to run on it against that Mexican girl from New York. Did you love how over the weekend, how Fox News put up the lower third graphic that said that president wants to cut off aid to three Mexican countries?
And it was Central American that they were going for there.
Yeah. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Now, he was also asked about the Mueller report, and he said,
I hope they now go and take a look at the oranges of the investigation, the beginnings of that investigation. You look at the origin of the investigation, where it started, how it started, who started it, whether it's McCabe or Comey or a lot of them. Where does it go? How high up in the White House did it go? You will all get Pulitzer Prizes, okay? You're going to all get Pulitzer Prizes. The Mueller report, I wish, covered the oranges, how it started.
I thought it was avocados, not oranges.
By the way, they're not coming across either. A lot of Mexico coming out of that.
Now, you think the oranges are bad. Just wait for the apples. I mean, they're the ones you really got to worry about. Come on.
There's bad apples.
Exactly.
Yeah. All right, checking in at
number four.
Chicago voters will make history regardless of who wins the mayoral runoff tonight. Candidate Lori Lightfoot and Tony Preckwinkle would be the city's first African-American female mayors. Either one of them. Maybe there'll be a statistical tie. The voter turnout is so low, it's possible. It is 22-22.
23% of the voters, roughly, have turned out.
Voters outside a polling place in the 35th Ward, where Ms. Lightfoot lives, was one of the several stops that she made throughout the day as she campaigned to bring change to City Hall.
I think people have to feel confident that change is actually coming. We can't just say it, we have to actually demonstrate it, and I'm hopeful that we get the turnout that we need to turn out our voters. We've had that kind of reception really all over the city, and you know, sure, you're physically tired, but when you see that kind of enthusiasm and really people placing their hopes in your hands, it's pretty magnificent feeling. Pretty humbling.
And Tony Preckwinkle was at the 95th Street Red Line Station, which now, that's cliche to go there, but she's there anyway.
Well, you know, I'm really optimistic. I've had a great several weeks here, and I'm encouraged. I've been all over the city. We were in Humboldt Park and Devon and all over the west side yesterday, and this morning we've been to, the 8th Ward and 95th and the Red Line, and we were in the third ward with Alderman Pat Dowell at Roosevelt Road. So we've been all over the city, and I've gotten a good reception. I'm encouraged.
All right. One of those two women is going to be the next mayor of the city of Chicago, and we'll find out at 7:02 tonight when the polls close.
I think it's pretty close. There aren't a ton of votes to be counted unless there's a late in the evening surge. And
of the river wards? You mean the wards that where the ballots were found in the river?
Where did these come from?
A little wet. We'll put them through the machine and see what happens. All right, we'll get to your 3, 2, and 1. But first, Cam, what's coming up at the bottom of the hour?
Row, no popping champagne to celebrate a win in Champaign, but you'll soon be able to enjoy a game in a cold one.
Hi, my friends. Kim Gordon's coming up in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. And let me just say that we've got a top five that we have to continue on with here, whether we like it or not. Because some of this stuff is creeping me out, man, like this one.
Number 3.
So there's a teacher in Long Island who got fired because she sent a picture of a 3-year-old topless. You know, like the 3-year-olds could be topless.
No,
you know?
I think it's her 3-year-old topless picture.
She sent a selfie that's 3 years old.
Yeah.
Very
different context.
I've been reading through this a few times just to double check. But it's her selfie
from
3 years ago.
Happens to be from 2015. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. Oh. To her then lover, right?
Yeah, yes. Also a teacher at the same school.
Uh-oh. And then she got fired, and she doesn't understand why.
What is wrong with my image? It's my breast, it's my chest, it's my body. It's something that should be celebrated. What message is that saying to the girls who have their photos airdropped all over the high school and sent all over? What message are we sending to them? To roll over when your picture gets exposed without your permission or consent? So how am I now not being a role model to them?
Or just so, don't take pictures of yourself.
Did the
I'm team Lauren Miranda, though. I think she's right. I mean, why does he get to put it out there, maybe in a revenge kind of situation, and he's fine and she's not?
That was true, but don't put yourself in the situation in the first place. That's the lesson, to be honest.
I think the lesson is don't show your face. I think that's the most important thing. If there's any lesson to be
that's
learned
not
here,
me.
Keep your face out of
yeah,
it.
Yeah, keep your face
that's
out of it.
That's my phone number, but that's not me.
Well, I've never been in that good of shape.
Her attorney, John Ray, has filed a notice of claim asking that the woman be reinstated at the school district and be paid $3 million for all the trouble.
Anytime a man has ever exposed his chest, no one has ever commented or had any problem with it whatsoever. But when a woman displays her chest, as happened here, she gets fired from her job.
Free the nipple.
It's legal in the state of New York for women to go topless in public, so they're trying to take that tack that this is nothing big. This isn't that big.
Your Honor, please.
I was at the beach last week and I saw plenty of men's chests.
There was all kinds of nips everywhere. I'm sorry, Your Honor. I'm not gonna sit here and let my client besmirching these United States of America. All right. Okay. Well, all right. Fine.
Free the nipple.
Yep.
Or fire them both.
Checking in at
number 2.
Seth Meyers, his thought on the president closing the Mexico border.
Officials are claiming that the United States will run out of avocados within 3 weeks if President Trump closes the U.S.-Mexico border, which is bad. But I think it's way more disconcerting that everything has to be explained to the public in avocados. There'll be a trade war. Families will be torn apart. Our national reputation will be damaged. Uh-huh. No guacamole. What?
It's true.
Peach.
It's true. No one seemed to care until they mentioned the avocado shortage. And now the price hike of 34% in one day.
Yep. I'm hoarding avocados right now.
What does an avocado go for?
They're expensive, I think.
Anywhere. You can get them from like $1 a piece. But I've seen them as low as like 30 cents a piece.
But they're usually, I thought they're like $1.50.
Yeah. 40 cents at Aldi right now. Well, now it's $400 at Aldi. I don't know. That's what it is. All right. And finally,
Number 1.
Here's Tracy Morgan. Trying to explain Jussie Smollett.
Oh, gee.
You don't buy that story?
What?
What happened?
Nah, man. Come on. First of all, racist people don't be jumping nobody in the polar vortex. Neo-racists don't be watching Empire, man. It's too cold. They said, we'll be racist in the spring. Because it was like 10 seconds of footage, and then he disappears for like 2 seconds. Then he reappears with the noose on his neck, still holding the Subway sandwich. He didn't let that Subway sandwich go.
He didn't.
I think it was pepperoni and cheese. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's true. The racists would have had to be watching Empire. I forgot about that little piece of information.
Oh, hell. Oh, we just got to watch that Empire because I understand there's one of them is gay. Oh, my God. Now I really hate the show. Can you believe it? Although, I'll tell you something. I do like Terrence Howard.
Oh, gee.
I think that is an Emmy-winning performance right there by Terrence Howard. Taraji P. Henson. Wait, who's in the? I hate to do this because I get everybody confused now. Is she in the new the one with Sam Rockwell about the? It's a true story about this this black woman and Ku Klux Klan member, Grand Wizard, in this little southern town during a race riot summer, and how they had an unusual relationship, like they became friends.
Hmm.
Best of Enemies. Now, see, I liked her in that one.
She's in it.
I liked her with Sam Rockwell because go Klan go, but I'm not gonna watch your Empire. Oh, man.
But we're gonna find that bastard who's in the show in the middle of the coldest damn week in Chicago history,
and do some research to know that he's gay
and where he lives,
and that he walks to Subway at 2 a.m.
Now, Cletus, we gotta go get a noose.
Don't touch the tuna sandwich, okay? Leave that alone. Bleach, okay. Noose, fine. Tuna sandwich, off limits.
Did you get the bleach? Or we forget the bleach? God, just bring a Tide pen then.
He lives somewhere in River North, wherever the hell that is.
Uh-huh. Hell, I'm not going to Chicago.
That's mega country, right? Isn't it?
I can get carjacked there. I know I got a Tide pen and a noose. What am I going to do? If they carjack me, oh hell, I can't go. Cletus, abort the operation. Oh, don't say abort.
It all makes sense now.
A very great point by Tracy Morgan.
The top five at five.
All right, it's election day here in Chicago.
It is. And still pretty low turnout, by the way. 24% roughly.
24 people have turned out to vote. Now, if you take the two candidates out, let's see, you got 24
you mean
minus
the two,
two
mayoral candidates.
11. If it ends 11 to 11 tonight, there's going to be a problem.
I like how they say, if you're in line by 7 o'clock, you are allowed by law to vote. I don't think that's going to be a problem today. There's no line nowhere that I've seen anywhere or heard of.
Yeah. Just you,
I'd be nice.
You and a cricket that are standing there at 7 o'clock tonight wanting to vote.
It's more like, hey, it's me. I'm a voter.
A.B. Stoddard joins us. And it is, we're just talking about, this is a little, this kind of a sadness thing in America, that here in Chicago, we have a mayoral election today. An historic mayoral election.
Sure.
Right? It's two African-American women as the finalist, first time that's ever happened. First time actually any African American woman has ever run for mayor in the in the finals here, and it is it's a big moment, and yet no one's showing up to vote, so
that's a problem.
Yeah, get out and vote.
Oh dear.
Yeah, it's record low turnout.
On track for that for sure.
They got to take that more seriously. That's not good.
No, Jussie Smollett
Everyone
might be the next mayor of Chicago.
Oh, no.
I mean, you get a low turnout like that. Jussie gets a bunch of people to write him in. You never know.
You'd like to wake up to that tomorrow.
Yes, I would. Actually, as a talk show host, I would like to wake up to that tomorrow. That guarantees 4 years of comedy right there. All right. Hey, let me go out to Washington here for just a second with you, because there's a lot of things that are going on here that I don't quite understand. Can I start with the Democrats? Can I start with Joe Biden? Maybe a middle-aged white man, privileged. I don't know what my problem is, but I don't see this as morally equivalent that Joe Biden put his hands on a woman's shoulders and then kissed the back of her head, which is weird. It's creepy. I admit it's too much interpersonal kind of space, but I don't see a moral equivalence to that and grabbing somebody by the genitals. I just don't. Is this
right? You know, I think this is going to be a question. Look, I am horrified by any attempts on the Republican side to make hay of this. Kellyanne Conway wanted to go on Fox on Sunday and say, "Well, this isn't you know this doesn't cut it on the in the Democrat Party," because I don't think that it would matter obviously in a general election if Biden was the Democratic nominee. I was pretty scandalized to see Don Jr. tweeting the picture. I mean the story about the second woman complaining that he also got too close and was going to give her an Eskimo kiss on her nose or whatever that happened in Connecticut. But it's a serious question, guys, on whether or not the Democrats are going to eat their own hair on this and whether or not there's just a total no tolerance. Everything is black and white, no gray matter debate here. I'm really looking for signs of, you know, whether or not there's going to be pushback. There's a lot of pushback, obviously, from Biden supporters. But look, there's a lot of people in the party, a lot of women in the party, donors, who are still litigating the fact that Al Franken had to leave the Senate. And they're angry at Senator Kirsten Gillibrand over this issue to this day. So while I see her trying to make an issue of Joe Biden, and I see Elizabeth Warren, you know, not wanting to say things like, this doesn't sound disqualifying. You know, she's just basically said he'll have to answer for this. I wonder how far the pushback will go and whether or not the actual Democratic primary electorate voters and the other candidates really push this issue in the days and weeks to come.
Before we move on to the next thing, though, the woman who's making the allegation here about getting kissed in the back of the head, doesn't she work for Bernie Sanders?
She's a Bernie supporter, and she basically admitted in her interview with Jake Tapper on Sunday, which I thought was good, that, yes, this is about politics. This is because he's running for president. And she said if he was the nominee against Trump, she would support Biden. But she thinks that, you know, this is material discussion.
I just love all the prominent celebrity types in politics, like Alyssa Milano saying, "I love it when he hugs me," and Whoopi Goldberg, "I wish he would hug me more." Everyone's trying to step up.
Hugs
from Biden.
The cavalry, and it's almost, you know, it's so obvious how, you know, the sort of like Twitter defense that flamed up for Biden these last 36 hours. But I mean, I do think he's probably going to have to come out and say something beyond, you know, everyone tweeting, you know, from Mika Brzezinski to Alyssa Milano, how great he's been. But I do understand that they find this a very uncomfortable corner because he's not officially yet a candidate. So do you have to, like, pre-apologize before you are a candidate? It's just very strange. And there's a lot of people who, you know, think this is being stoked by, you know, the Bernie camp. And, you know, there's just a lot of tension right now. And I don't know that the Biden camp has decided on how to address it.
You see, Speaker Pelosi said, "Just pretend you have a cold and I have a cold." She was sort of explaining how she wants him to deal with these things.
I know. It's really hard to teach a man in his 70s new interpersonal skills. Mm-hmm. He's totally an overhugger and all that. But certainly he has to say something. And I think Pelosi, you know, was making a good point. Like, it's not disqualifying. It's a new time. You're from a different era. Just realize that people don't want you sniffing their scalp or whatever.
That's a very weird.
From your backside into your face and kissing your head.
Have you ever seen him? Like, there was just that that moment a couple of weeks ago where we had to do the lip reading where he was talking to some other guy. Uh-huh. And there was like, you know, "Are you going to run? Tell me if you're going to run." It was some international diplomat. It was like some European guy. And I can't remember who it was. And he leans in and he's almost kissing the guy. He is a close talker. Uh-huh. He is one of those guys who wants to just, you know, he's basically Roger Sterling from Mad Men is who he is.
I just want to interject because I actually know the senator and I covered the Senate for ABC News and was, you know, I spoke to him, you know, several times a week in person. He did not sniff my hair or do anything like that, but he treats everyone like family. And that's, if you know him and you know that, it's not out of the question that he's going to do it to like a male prime minister, a female prime minister. You know, there are people on the record saying that they've seen him, you know, grab men, and he's an arm squeezer. I mean, he is, and he's a thoroughly decent person who obviously does not understand how it's been received. I just haven't personally, I'm not condoning anything he did to Lucy Flores or the other woman, and I certainly have not experienced that. But I have known him as a reporter, and he is that way. He's effusive, and he's enthusiastic, and he grabs for emphasis, and it's all done. If you know him, well, like, so, all these people, including
AB, wait a second. The president grabs for emphasis, too. That's how he looks at it. This is, I'm going to make my point right now.
I just think it's wonderful that Trump world thinks that because there's not video of him doing the Access Hollywood assault, which he's described on tape, because there's no video or pictures of it, they can like make an ad about Creepy Joe. It's just gonna be an interesting year and a half.
Yeah,
there is cringeworthy video of him grabbing Brigitte Macron, though. When he basically arm wrestled her to try to bring her in to try to hug her at that. Oh, I don't know. That one is worth calling up if you need something.
Yeah, listen, I don't need to look at any of this. I'll be honest. All I want, I just want somebody who's not nuts. That's all. That's what I'm looking for. I have a very low bar now.
Yeah, that's not a high bar.
I'm just looking for somebody who doesn't appear to be breaking from reality. And if I can get that, that's okay. Now, the president today, again, talking about the Mexico, the Mexico border and how it's a Chris Cuomo has been down at the border for CNN. Pretty interesting stuff he did last night where he's talking to actual border security guys and, you know, the former head of the border patrol in Hidalgo, Texas. And it was really... you know, it's heartbreaking when you watch it. And yes, there are a lot of people coming across, and there are a lot of people bringing kids across, and there is a humanitarian issue that is going on there, although they point out that it was 10 times greater in the 1980s into the 1990s than it is now in terms of numbers. But it's still a problem, and they don't have enough places to put them. And the idea here by Homeland Security at the moment, the new nexus, is what we're going to do is we're going to make it just harder for people to bring their kids across. We're going to send people back. We want them to then go back and tell the story about, hey, America's closed. We can't go up there anymore. That's the whole idea that they're trying to send. Does that fit with the American ideal of who we see ourselves as?
Yeah, I watched most of it last night, and it is, and I've obviously, we've all been watching this since this family separation issue arose last year, and it is really, it's very clear the administration did what they did in the detention centers as a deterrent. I mean, that was an intentional policy to send the message back that we're not wanted here and they're not going to be nice. They're going to separate you from your babies, everything. It's not working. We have, the numbers were worse than other times, but the numbers are bad now. And I think that what the Democrats have to do is wake up to the reality that, you know, they have to deal with this issue with the administration. Closing the border is crazy. Republicans have told this to the president for the last couple of days. The wall doesn't work because this is an asylum crisis. We cannot absorb the number of refugees that we traditionally have as a refugee nation, as an immigrant nation. There are displaced peoples all around the Middle East and Europe. 3 million people leaving Venezuela in 4 years alone. We simply cannot absorb the numbers. And if we cut off aid and don't make a proactive, concerted effort to deal with narco-terrorism in Central America, which is the reason they're running for their lives, not men who are MS-13 members with their big packs of fentanyl coming to kill us, their families with children fleeing for their lives and their safety. And we can deal with it here or we can deal with it there. And so there has to be a sober bipartisan conversation about that. And I know Democrats don't want to say we can't take in every refugee. I know that. But it's not realistic. And the administration is finally saying, President Trump has tried to play this as a criminal invasion. He's finally talking about refugees and asylum. He doesn't speak about it cogently. He doesn't speak about it cooperatively. He doesn't try to build consensus. He wants to create an action scenario where he's shutting something down. it's always super drastic and super urgent, and it's kind of, it always sounds like a tantrum. So it's not the way to get a sane policy on narrowing the criteria for asylum or looking at our asylum laws. But we cannot handle the flow that we have. That has to be addressed by both parties. And I think the Democrats are in denial about the fact that it is a refugee crisis that needs some attention. And I think the administration also has been disingenuous by trying to make it sound like it's criminals coming with their drugs when those are coming to the ports of entry. And we know a wall won't fix this. And that shutting down cross-border trade, 45% of our produce, $1.8 billion in commerce a day is obviously unthinkable.
How concerned are you about the avocado crisis, the looming avocado crisis?
34% today. Prices are shooting up.
Apparently, this will be a big struggle for a majority in this country. But there are other vegetables that we will have to pay higher prices for.
The avocado is not a vegetable.
You get avocado toast without avocado.
The avocado is a nut. Or what is it?
Okay.
Tree nut, isn't it?
I'm going to worry about some lettuces and some fruits and other things as well as the avocado is the point I'm trying to make. And I think that it's clear that, you know, this is like not, there's no way he's going to do this.
I think you're making light. I think you're making light of the serious crisis that is about to befall Whole Foods markets throughout the nation.
War.
It's also a fruit.
It's a fruit. Yeah, mm-hmm. It's a something. Anyway, it is a crazy thing that this idea of shutting down the border to punish Mexico until they figure out what they're going to do is punishing American companies. It just, it is, and you know he's pulling, this will not happen, but he likes to threaten this, and you know it.
The conniption, the governance by conniption fit is, that's what he does. He likes action verbs, shut down, he likes drama, everything has to be an emergency, and then people beg him not to do it. Are you kidding me? Republicans are on the record, like, this is untenable, that he cannot do this.
All right, they begged me not to do it, all right, I won't do it. Fine, but you know what I'm going to do now? I'm going to kill the firstborn child of every... Wait, who? Wait. Oh, no. Too Jewish. Okay, can't do that. It's like, I don't even know where any of this leads us. We have... did you see the story today about the woman trying to sneak into Mar-a-Lago with all the Chinese cell phones and a thumb drive with malware and everything? And then when the Secret Service stopped her, they said, well, who are you here to see? I'm here to see someone, she said. Like, that's the worst spy ever right there.
She was coming to talk about Chinese US economic relations, and she was defiant and angry when she got caught. Mm-hmm. What a surprise that the not secure enough Mar-a-Lago entry system has finally caught the attention of the very smart Chinese who are out to hack us into within an inch of our lives. Yeah. I mean, this has been coming for a long time.
Right. Then she went right back to Orchids of Asia, where she turned in her homework. All right. Thank you very much. Appreciate it, AB.
Thanks, AB.
Thanks, guys.
Goodbye. to her superior, Ming Fu Hulu. All right. Hold on here. Don't anybody move. Let's find out from Kim what's happening at the top of the hour.
Ro, a huge warehouse fire burning on the northwest side will bring you the latest.
All right, stepping into the studio right now, very proud and pleased to have Emilio Estevez with us. Also, Rhymefest is here.
Yeah.
His new movie called, is a regular on this program, by the way. Emilio, you should become a regular on the program. It's really
I got to move to Chicago, I think. Yeah.
So let's talk about this, because you've got a movie based in Cincinnati called The Public. It's about a siege at a public library.
That's right.
In Cincinnati. All right, so why Cincinnati?
Well, so first of all, this was originally written to take place in Los Angeles. And obviously, we don't have the same cold issues that that you do here in the Midwest. So the movie was up and running. It fell apart in 2008 with the financial crisis hitting all of us. Mm-hmm. And so I shelved it. And in the interim, in fact, while I was I left Chicago while I was on tour for The Way, which was the last time I was in the city, and we were on this cross-country tour, similar to what we're doing now. Our last stop was in Cincinnati to screen The Way, And I met with the film commission there and said, hey, do you have anything that could be rewritten to shoot here in Cincinnati? Ohio has a great tax incentive, and would you consider us? So I stayed an extra couple days. I got a tour of the city, and I thought, this is a cool spot.
And your family's got roots there, right? Cincinnati.
My dad's from Dayton. My mom was born in Cincy and then raised across the river over in Kentucky. So I feel very, the area feels very familiar to me. I feel very at home there. And in fact, I bought a building there in the OTR area of the city. So I'm dug in now, and I'm a resident.
Wow, that's very cool. And you're a Reds fan, right? Aren't you?
I don't really follow sports.
Okay.
I like the
just
fact that
yes
since...
And,
okay, yes,
yeah.
I'm a Reds fan.
His dad was ever since he was a wrestler in high school in Breakfast Club, and his dad pushed him too hard.
Well, you know, okay. here's what I love about Cincinnati and sports. It's close to the Kentucky Derby. It's close to...
Very important. You a horse guy?
I love the races. It's two. I have ADD, so it's like 2 hour. Instead of a 2 hour game, it's a 2 minute race.
It's a small investment. I have an investment for you right now. If you'd like, I got a lot of horses I can sell you.
That's true.
But now it's about a library, and I know a lot of the press around this movie, the public, is about the fact that you came to international prominence by being stuck in a library.
That's right.
In the Breakfast
Club. We shot right here.
Right. Right.
Well, yeah. Just outside of town, actually.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. And then, this is a movie about homeless living in a library who are getting kicked out. And we find out that there's a lot of people living in this library that people didn't see, right? Because this is a real issue.
That's right. So it was originally inspired by a piece in the LA Times. It was published in the LA Times by a Salt Lake City librarian. He was retiring. His name is Chip Ward. And the thesis of the essay was how libraries have become de facto homeless shelters, and librarians have become first responders and de facto social workers. And so I was really moved by the piece. I had done the bulk of the research for a film, a part of that called Bobby, at the downtown branch of the LAPL. So I knew what Chip Ward was talking about. So I went back to that same library that I did the research for Bobby on, and I sort of hung out and put a hoodie on and just observed. And I began to imagine what it would be like if the patrons, many of whom are homeless and experiencing mental health issues, what would happen if they said, we're not leaving, we're a shelter any, what would happen? How would law enforcement react? How would the politicians react? How would the media spin it? And again, this is back in 2007. So it has taken me 12 years to get this far, to finally make the movie, and now obviously this is probably the most important and most difficult part, and that is promoting a film like this that doesn't necessarily press all the blockbuster buttons.
That's
right.
That is true.
And yet it's a very entertaining movie.
Absolutely. And Emilio's mentioned Bobby. If people haven't had a chance to see it, it's one of the great films of the 2000s. Almost a Robert Altman-esque film all these different characters. And Bobby is Bobby Kennedy. And you do it again in this film, Emilio. One of the things about this film, when people hear the subject matter, they go, oh my gosh, is this going to be a lecture? It's not. It's mainstream entertainment. And you have this incredible gift for casting. Of course, this guy next year, we got Che in this. But, all of a sudden, there's Gabrielle Union as a local TV reporter. Kind of model on Anna DeVlantes, I think, quite frankly.
I've done that before.
And then you've got, Jenna Malone, who's terrific, and Jeffrey Wright shows up, and then all of a sudden, here comes Alec Baldwin comes bustling in as the hostage negotiator.
Here comes trouble.
That's right.
You know, and I mean, and Christian Slater, who's a great guy. Michael K. Williams. And Christian Slater, who's a wonderful guy, but can play the oily, ambitious politician. How do you assemble a cast like this for a film, as you mentioned, is not a blockbuster?
No, and I think the what we have going for us when you shoot a film on an independent budget is your shooting schedule. So we shot this movie in 22 days, and that meant I go to Alec Baldwin and I say, hey, I need you for 5. You go to Gab and you say, hey, Gabrielle, I need you for 4 days. So obviously these people are all very, very busy. So when you can ask of them a very short commitment, they tend to want to say yes, and they tend to want to be involved.
So you're directing the film. How do you make that happen, that you're able to get it on time and you're on location doing it?
That's right.
There's a lot of different things that go into that.
At the actual library, right? The main library.
Yes, we shot the actual library. They gave us access, which was in and of itself a miracle.
Yeah. You know,
we were again, I'll go back to Los Angeles. We were going to shoot it in the library there. I remember getting a tour of the downtown branch of the LAPL, and the head librarian was just shaking her head, just, this is not going to happen. It's never going to happen here. I can't allow it. And finally, I just said, why? I said, this is going to, it's going to highlight your profession. Mm. It's going to take place. People don't even know what you do as a profession. So I'm really going to underscore and highlight that. And she said, well, we had another film company come through here. And they turned on their lights, and the lights heated up, and it turned on the sprinklers, and the sprinklers ruined all these books.
Oh, jeez.
And I said, oh, wow, who were those amateurs? And she said, it was a company and a show called The West Wing.
Oh, jeez. Oh,
and
oh, no.
So there was no recovery from that. It's a true story. There's no recovery. And so,
how's your dad, by the way?
Exactly, right? Yeah. So it made the choice to then go to Cincinnati. And they, of course, had not had the same experience as the LAPL had.
Right.
And I just sort of appealed to them, and I said, we will not impinge the public's access to all of the information that exists in this institution. We respect it. And they said yes.
Good for you. My sister was a librarian for a year. They're very rules-oriented people.
That's
I
right.
know.
Oh, yeah.
And very, very much so. But, it's interesting. The setting of the library is, it's sort of become a symbol of how things have evolved. When I was growing up in Chicago and Rhymefest, maybe you were, we went there all the time.
That's right.
We went for homework help. You went for tutoring. You went for, like, puppet shows and reading. And, like, they would read to you. And you'd learn. You'd get fascinated about the world. Sometimes a zoo would come by and bring an animal. And you'd learn about that. Jobs. And you saw applications. And you saw people about immigration and visa. I mean, all kinds of things. It was a resource for that community.
Right.
And now, if you have any sense, sort of privilege in this world, you have your Wi-Fi, you have what you need, you can get a tutor, and you don't need to go there. So it's become like sort of a symbol of how divided we are in many ways. I don't know if you see that.
But, you know, if you go downtown to the Harold Washington Library.
That's a beautiful library.
Beautiful and bustling, you know. So they have the U Media Center where young people are coming from all over town to participate in music programs and skill building STEM technology. The libraries are now having STEM classes. You know, the first time I saw my father ever after 30 years of homelessness, he wanted to meet me in the library. Because as a homeless person, that's where he felt he could have dignity in meeting his son instead of at the homeless shelter or the park where he hung out. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So the library over time has evolved into a lot of different type of things. And right now it's becoming something new. It's a social place. It's a community center. It's a place where people go who don't have resources. You know what I mean? Whereas when we were young, it's where we went to check out books. Now it's where people go to come together.
And it's what Eric Klinenberg talks about in his new book, Palaces for the People, that the library is the cornerstone for that social infrastructure. And that we not only have to preserve them, we have to build more of them.
You know what I think is interesting about this film, too, is that the film, by the way, is called The Public. And it's opening nationwide here.
April 5th.
Yeah. So you get to see this. Is that you actually see the books in the library. You know, Che, as you're talking about when you go to the Harold Washington Library, you got to work a little bit to find the books, right? Because you got to.
It's art.
Right. There's all kinds of other stuff going on. Hey, where are the books? And
there was about an 18-month period where, let's face it, in the early 2000s, where you could see certain things on a computer in a library that you couldn't see anywhere else. We'll just
really true. Yeah.
The books are on Amazon. are all on Amazon.
But you found a way to work the stacks in, you know, to your film and all
right.
that. And that gives you that sense of constriction, too. Everything gets real intimate, and it reminds you, and anybody, you know, who went to middle school and to high school, and, you know, if you went to college, you're familiar with that sense of sort of being surrounded by all that. Really, it becomes its own character.
And you're stoked by curiosity, I think, when you set, the minute you set foot in the library. I mean, you know, we're old enough to remember when you look for a particular word in the dictionary, you know, on your way to it, you'd stop 5, 6, 10 times.
Sure.
Same with an encyclopedia. You're looking up a subject, you'll stop 10 times before you get to that. And so that sort of level of curiosity is kind of gone. It's missing from a lot of young people's lives. And so what else are we missing? And I think we have to have to check in with ourselves and say, you know, with this, with the new technology, and it's all wonderful. What are we skipping over? What are we flying over? Mm-hmm. When you think about librarians, they were the first Google.
Mm-hmm. Right. Absolutely. Yeah, I remember they have a blackboard. There are no stupid questions, encouraging you to come up. And, you know, one of the things that Chay mentioned about, you know, meeting his father at the library and that feeling of dignity, there's also a sense of order, you know, and you know, I think you touch on that in the film where, for one thing, we don't get the stereotypes of the lovable homeless, the noble homeless who have never done anything wrong. Some, you know, these are human beings just like everybody else who are there with different circumstances. But one of the things, they do have a sense of community and a sense of belonging at the library.
That's right. And a sense, and I think what we really attempt to do with this film is to humanize. Mm. And I think by using humor and you know, again, in my research, when you talk to individuals experiencing homelessness, there are some tragic stories, some heartbreaking stories, but there's also some very, very funny stories, and they're not ashamed to be forthcoming with them.
And you let us know early on in the film, it's okay to have some laughs with this movie.
That's right.
I mean, some of these characters are real characters.
That's right. No, that's right. And I think that, again, I think people are surprised by the humor in the film, and I think, and to your point, yes, once they know it's okay, I think they go along for the ride.
It's stuff. It really, and it's interesting because it then turns into basically a hostage film, right? I mean, it's a situation of standoff.
Well,
I mean, people, this
news,
is not about
a fake news movie, really. It becomes about how the media spins it and how the politicians are continuing to criminalize the poor. And how do we and victimize them?
But there's some action in this as which is, I think what's interesting is people are going to think, well, it's a movie about homeless people at a library. Yeah, well, what had happened was that all of a sudden we find out there's too many people there, and nobody wants to leave, and the whole thing gets weird, and then Alec Baldwin shows up.
Uh-huh.
That's the most important thing you need to know about this film, and I think that's how it works. You know, I read something about talking about protests. Your family has always been involved in this. You know, your dad was famously involved in the Cesar Chavez.
He was arrested 66 times.
Right. In sit-ins and things like
that's
that.
Right.
And we got the great pleasure of meeting your dad a couple years ago when you guys were here. He's one of those figures that I don't know they exist in modern modern archetype. You know, he's like a really principled conservative Catholic in terms of his mores.
That's right.
But then
he's the only guy in The Departed that we could really trust and look up to. When you look back on him, he's the only one.
But he's also so true. Like a social activist. Right. I read that when he was 14 years old, he was working as a caddy at a country club in Dayton.
That's right.
And he started a strike,
He organized, yeah.
Because the caddies were offended by the way that these well-heeled Daytonites were treating the caddies and the crap they were saying around them, and they were all anti-Semitic and they were business leaders.
That's right.
like a whole thing. I mean,
no, he
I
called them out.
Like, wow.
He called them out at 14 years old.
At 14 years old.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah.
So it runs in your blood here.
That is who he is. And he is very principled. Again, comes from the Midwest, comes from really good stock. He and my mother both.
Yeah.
So they're still together 58 years.
That's amazing.
You know, which is in not only in Hollywood, but in general.
In the world.
That's pretty incredible.
But even with all of your father's adventures as a young actor, I know when you were a kid, he always would keep the family together. And if that meant that you and Charlie were going to, if it meant that you were going to travel halfway across the world and be on the set or, you know, anywhere, you traveled as a family. So you always had the sense of family. It wasn't like, oh, dad's off making a movie for six
months.
No,
it was sort of showed us how the sausage was made, if you will. And we would pile into the Country Squire station wagon and drive to West Virginia. We'd drive to Wyoming, Colorado. If it meant to traveling overseas, they always insisted that there were six tickets. They believed that the family, for the family to stay together, we actually had to physically stay together. And when you're a young kid going through that, it's disruptive. And yet I wouldn't have traded any of that.
Did that also spark your interest not only in acting but filmmaking? You're on the set of Badlands with Terrence Malick Francis Coppola. You know.
And you're watching how these artists do it. It was inspiring and definitely informed.
But what you learn, though, is the family secret it's not his dad that runs it. It's his mom.
I think you get the sense.
His mom is the one that got me in the film.
His
mom told him to put me in the film.
Yeah, she saw the documentary In My Father's House, which is about what Che was describing, how the reunion with his father.
Yes.
And she said, you have to check this gentleman out.
Wow.
You have to see this documentary. And if he can act, he needs to be in your movie because he has a lived experience.
Wow.
Yeah. And when I finally got to meet his mom, she's very reserved, but she's the professor. She's the Professor Xavier of all of the mutants in her family.
That's it.
That's it.
That's fantastic.
Right. No, it's true. No, she is the center of the family.
An amazing story. It's an amazing story. And, you know, it's a movie in and of itself, the sort of the Martin Sheen experience, who's Ramon Estevez, right?
That's right.
His real name.
That's right.
And how he ended up becoming Martin Sheen, and then how, you know, raising the kids and doing the stuff, and then all the different things that happened. And I know when we met you guys a couple of years ago, you know, Charlie was in the middle of his moment.
That's right.
But you know what's, I think, very cool about this, all the struggles that he has had, there's still he seemed to come back to zero set center, which I think is a pretty amazing testament to the power of the family, the power of
Indeed.
Your mom.
Indeed.
Right? Because I think at the end of the day, he didn't really want to disappoint her.
No, and I think that if you could sort of distill it down to one word, it would be grace. Mm. You know, there's just a tremendous amount of grace that is shown to each other.
Right.
In the midst of all the chaos.
Right. And that's a principle taught in the family. Yeah. It's clear, right? Yeah. All right. Well, people got to go see The Public because it opens April 5th. Alec Baldwin, Emilio Estevez, Jenna Malone, Taylor Schilling, Christian Slater, Gabriel Union, Michael K. Williams, Jeffrey Wright, and our own, Chicago's very own, Che Rhymefest-Smith are in The Public.
Oh, yeah. How about
that? It's a huge cast. It's such a unique concept.
Thank you.
And a beautifully made film. So
thank you
congratulations.
Very much. I appreciate
congratulations.
It. Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Kim Gordon's got the news at the bottom of the hour. What's coming up?
Roe, the warehouse fire burning on the northwest side has now escalated to a 4-alarm fire.
It's the Roe Con Show with Anna DeVlantis right here on 720 WGN. Stepping into the studio, he's the political editor of Chicago. He is the great Mike Flannery.
He is.
And you can see him tonight on the Fox 32 starting at 9 o'clock, giving his expert take on what has happened here, his reportage and analysis. And then there's going to be a young kid in broadcasting joining him.
That's who I'm counting on hearing the observations and reportage.
Yes. I'll be there just to keep everything honest. You know how that works. And it is, you know, it's a funny situation because it certainly appeared as though Lori Lightfoot was running away with this thing. And now the turnout is so abysmally low. We might have a horse race tonight.
Well, it's just so you know, the latest was 20% as of 1 o'clock this afternoon. Everyone thought that's pathetic, and it went to 23. Now it's at 29.8, so nearly 30%. There has been a late afternoon, early evening
surge.
So it's jumping by 3, 4, 5% an hour here, and we're now into the final hour,
16 minutes away.
The final 16, 18 minutes.
But that's even below February.
Well, but remember, we're going to get an additional 1% plus from the provisional ballots and then the vote by mail, which has exploded 62% larger, the vote by mail than in the previous go round.
Uh-oh.
People have figured out.
Does that worry anyone?
Yeah. If you get that
thing. Looking at that stat and kind of worried. Rose is losing it.
Oh my God! All the mail coming in from Maywood. You're like, hey, wait a second. Isn't there a headquarters in Maywood for the Cook County? Wait, what? Oh my God!
So you know,
it's
we could
be a lot closer. It could be a lot closer. Now wait, now they open that starting at 7 o'clock tonight, right? When do they put that into the machine?
Well, so that final percent is what arrives. That's what it was in February. It added about 1% to the total turnout, and that came in after it only has to be postmarked by today.
Okay.
And hey, we happen to get 10,000 of them right now, postmarked by today. Why did that happen?
In put bundles, them in the mail.
All in bundles, all wrapped together.
It could be more postmarked than 10,000.
It's coming in by UPS. What can happen? Can I ask a question? If it's what now the right now 29%, does that count the early voting numbers?
Yes. Okay. Yes.
So that's 29% turnout,
and it counts the vote by mails that have already arrived.
Oh,
got it.
Oh, so yeah, as of 6 p.m., just a hair under 30%.
Okay. So now we had a guy on who's from over by your neighborhood, who said that he went in to go vote this morning, and they told him he'd already voted. He'd already early voted. And he goes, I did not early vote. And they said, and so he called.
You got that Twilight Zone music?
don't call for stuff. He called the alderman's office, Alderman Matt O'Shea, of course. That's what I always call him.
Uh-huh.
From Beverly. He calls the alderman, and he goes, hey, what's going on? And the alderman, you know, an assistant, you know, somebody in the alderman's office, called and found out. They said, well, they said you voted, you know, last Monday. And he goes, I was in Mexico last Monday.
He's out of the country. Yeah.
Yeah.
Doesn't make sense.
Or Arizona, one of those. Which, right. According to Donald Trump, is the same thing.
Clearly wasn't in town.
Yeah. So it's kind of cray-cray right there.
Yeah. Call Kim Fox.
She's busy right now. She can't take the phone call. She's at a pre-Oscars party for next year. Maybe she's at
There's
a Tony's
no
party. Maybe she's going to go to a. She's going to do this. She's in New York. She and I don't know. I don't. You know what? Don't even get me started about her. Don't even get me started. About
Sounds
her.
Like potential vote fraud to me, though.
Yes, that does sound like that.
I'm not the smartest guy in the world, but I ain't the dumbest either.
I was trying to think of the accidental way that happens, that a specific voter casts a specific ballot, mails it in with a specific ID on it. I don't know. I'm hoping that's just an isolated event. That's what I'm hoping for.
Jesse Smollett making his last vote here before he left town. Still with a noose around his neck and a Subway sandwich in his hand. All right, let me just ask you in these other races that are happening here. There's the treasurer, right?
Right.
So you've got
Amaya Pawar and Melissa Conyers Irvin, whose husband is the West Side Alderman,
Jason Irvin, and they, wife, right?
You know, she's got several of the big public employees unions.
She's
behind
somebody
her.
Somebody sent.
Yep. Very definitely.
Amaya Pawar, not somebody somebody sent.
Correct.
So could it be the not somebody somebody sent election, or could it be the system working its magic at the end?
Well, they've given the unions have given her big bucks. She's been on TV with those treasurer's hats. But I tell you what, far more interesting than that contest to me are some of these are the runoffs involving some of the veteran aldermen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Pat O'Connor. Clearly seems to...
And spending a lot of money on television, right?
He was on TV after getting forced into the runoff. He only got about 33% of the vote.
Mm-hmm. I think that's kind of an effective ad with his daughter. I mean, I've seen it enough, and they've spent... And I'm trying to think, how much money could you spend as an aldermanic candidate?
Well, they've got a lot of money.
So we called up. We've been calling up for a while, trying to find out where he's going to be tonight, mm-hmm. watching the votes roll in. We called his office this afternoon and said, hey. And they said, no, we haven't picked a spot yet.
Peshtigo, Wisconsin.
We haven't picked.
We're going to the summer house.
Wait, that's so rare.
Now, again, I'm not the smartest guy in the world, but I ain't the dumbest either. And if at 4 o'clock in the afternoon you haven't picked your victory party location, maybe you're not planning one.
Oh, man.
Oh.
He's going to be celebrated at home quietly with friends and family.
And his challenger, Mr. Vasquez, Andre Vasquez, has declined. He wouldn't come on my weekend show, the challenger. And he told me, I'm up by 15 percentage points. So I don't need to.
And he's again, they're running negative ads against him, right? That he's got a background as a very offensive rapper.
And used foul language.
Yes, he's once used foul language. That has never happened in this city.
Yeah.
We do not stand for it.
And Deb Mel, you know, she's among those on the bubble, the daughter of the longtime alderman up there. And
the sister-in-law of the imprisoned governor.
Prison governor, yeah. So, And then Jim Kappelman in a heck of a contest up in 46 in the Uptown neighborhood on the north side. That's, you know, so we're watching those.
Yeah.
And some of the others, 15 runoffs.
Flannery, those are wards that you just named that would that Lightfoot won handily or certainly picked up a lot of votes in
they
a crowded race.
They are the wards that put her over the top. And the runoffs there are spurring turnout. I think the turnout's a bit higher than in some of the wards where there isn't an aldermanic runoff, and you don't have the dozens of people out working precincts and stumping to get people to vote and pass out those vote by mail. Those either valid or fraudulent vote by mail forms. So yeah,
I told the story earlier. I went to the polling place today, and it was like one of those movies where an asteroid hit Earth and everyone was dead, and I was the only one alive. There was nobody outside of the polling place. I walk in, and there was just three people quietly, behind the little desk.
They look surprised to see you.
Yes. What are you doing here? Is there fresh water in here? Was basically the question that I had.
What about those West and Southside wards that Willie Wilson did so well in? He endorsed Lightfoot, but you wonder how that's going to play.
So the turnout is comparable to some of the North. The North Lakefront, the South Lakefront have where on the South Lakefront's where Preckwinkle carried wards. Mm-hmm. That's where she lives. That's where she's lived for decades.
Hyde Park is where her big celebration or her party
tonight.
Right,
at the Promontory there. Right? Yeah, the nightclub. And, that's so the turnout's respectable there. But if you're looking for straws in the wind, something that will upset the polls, contradict the polls, I don't see it. I just don't see it. And again, if Tony Preckwinkle should win.
Yeah. What happens to her job?
Well, there's
Todd Strudger gets it.
Yeah, No,
Kim Fox. That would be the ultimate right there. I'm just going to announce Kim Fox is now the new county board president. She did such a great job.
Well, tune in tonight, and we'll tell you that.
You'll discuss
on
that.
The 9
o'clock I already got it figured out who I want. I got a list of people for the county board. Because listen, Todd Strudger proved that you could sit home and play Mario Kart and still be the county board president. It's okay. It's fine to do. So I don't think you need a genius to run that thing. So it'll be fun to watch.
Are you guys noticing anything with voter irregularities or anything like that? I know I did see...
What kind of question is that?
Well, who's asking? I'm asking because I think it's a question Mike Flannery would be on top of if it was going on. You might know about it.
I haven't heard anything out of the ordinary. Okay. We usually get a couple, or a handful, a dozen of these kinds of complaints. Not usually quite as specific as what you said the guy from the 19th Ward complained about, that somebody voted for him. He was in Mexico.
Tried to vote today.
That's a good one.
Yeah, that sounds like grand jury material there.
Jeez.
Someone's going to go to jail for that.
Usually it's, the precinct workers overslept.
Whoever did it, it should be a diversion, and they should expunge that person's record. Uh-huh. Whoever did that.
Seal it, then.
No one should see it. No one should see it. And that's what we're going to do, because we do that with the nonviolent criminals. That's how we handle it.
Well, I have a question. Can you go online somewhere and see if you voted? Just because, let's say maybe you didn't make it, but you wanted to see if you...
He said that you can't... Now, remember, when the guy called us, he said that the person in the 19th Ward office told him, they gave him a website that he can go to and see if his provisional ballot cleared.
No.
Because they have to do an investigation in this. And when they do an investigation, I can just imagine what's going on. The in-depth kind of, nose to the grindstone investigations that go on in situations like this.
They have the DNA analysis.
Yes. I can say they're, exactly.
Let's get the envelope the mailed ballot was in. Let's see who licked that envelope.
They're going to follow the shadow voter in their Uber ride from their home to the polling place at the time. Ping their cell phone.
At least the temperature wasn't below zero.
Yeah. Oh, God. This town, I've never felt as uneasy about anything as I do about my nation and my town right now. I just don't know what to do. But I will be shocked. I will be totally surprised if Toni Preckwinkle wins. But if she does, I'm sure the fix was in. That's how I look at it.
Well,
and you can see me saying that live on television, and then Matt Piacente, the news director at Fox, dragging, you'll see him trying to drag me off the set. It's going to be
the
like,
hook around your neck.
I cut his mic. Be mad as
it'll
hell.
Be like that Three Stooges show.
Go to your windows now and scream. I want you to be mad as hell, and I'm not going to take it anymore. All right, that's what's going to be happening tonight. And
don't worry about it, Flannery. It's going to go great.
After 9 o'clock.
Sounds like something I tune in for.
Don't go. Go to your gods or your gurus.
Pick up your television set. Throw open the window. Throw it out the window.
That's why they hire me. Instant ratings. All right, here we go. Thank you, Flans. We're going to see you tonight at 9 o'clock on the Fox 32.
Thank you, Mike Flannery.
Let's talk about what's happening at the top of the hour here. Kim?
Roe, the poll's about to close and election night returns about to get underway.